Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 28th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 8. And let me get it up on the screen here. Okay, this is the Gospel of Matthew. We're picking up, we finished last week on chapter 8, chapter 7, so we're in chapter 8, and it's being read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 8. When he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus saith unto him, See thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion, beseeching him, and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this man, Go, and he goeth, and to another, Come, and he cometh, and to my servant, Do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled, and said to them that followed, Verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And I say unto you, that many shall come from the east and west, and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus said unto the centurion, Go thy way, and as thou hast believed, so be it done unto thee. And his servant was healed in the selfsame hour. And when Jesus was come into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother laid and sick of a fever. And he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and ministered unto them. When the even was come, they brought unto him many that were possessed with devils, and he cast out the spirits with his word, and healed all that was sick, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Esaias the prophet, saying, Himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses. Now when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave commandment to depart unto the other side. And a certain scribe came and said unto him, Master, I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest. And Jesus saith unto him, The foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. And another of his disciples said unto him, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. But Jesus said unto him, Follow me, and let the dead bury their dead. And when he was entered into a ship, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves. But he was asleep. And his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. And he saith unto them, Why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, What manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? And when he was come to the other side, into the country of the Gergesenes, there met him two possessed with devils, coming out of the tombs, exceeding fierce, so that no man might pass by that way. And behold, they cried out, saying, What have we to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God? Art thou come hither to torment us before the time? and there was a good way off from them, and heard of many swine feeding. So the devils besought him, saying, If thou cast us out, suffer us to go away into the herd of swine. And he said unto them, Go. And when they were come out, they went into the herd of swine, and behold, the whole herd of swine ran violently down a steep place into the sea, and perished in the waters. And they that kept them fled, and went their ways into the city, and told everything, and what was befallen to the possessed of the devils. And behold, the whole city came out to meet Jesus, and when they saw him, they besought him that he would depart out of their coasts.
Okay, tonight what we're going to do is we'll do announcements first, if there is any, and questions. Jen, are there any questions? We'll do questions next, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about a few things. We were at court this past Friday, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. But let's first see if we have any announcements or questions. Jan? I see you unmuted your mic, but not hearing you. Okay. You go, okay, you're unmuted again. Yeah, we're not hearing you. Maybe your mic's not plugged in. Terry, are you aware of any questions or announcements, or anybody up there? Do they have any announcements?
I don't know of any announcements, but we do have several questions. I have not gone through them yet.
All right. Well, why don't you start asking them until Jan picks up whatever you got?
Okay. Let me get over to that portion. Questions. All right. I'm sure that I won't have the most current, but let's see, 21st. It's 28, so that was last time. First is anything I can do? Medical clinic. I cannot go for appointment without wearing a mask. Made the appointment, but the damn totalitarian stuff, and it's been years of it. Just more coercion and disregard and silence to force compliance to lunacy and lawlessness.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the question. Obviously, these people are out of control. There's no doubt about that. But not sure I understand. What was the question?
Well, the question is that all this is happening. Is there anything she can do? She doesn't know how to take action.
Yeah, there's really not much we could do. I mean, some people could take a stand, but you really have to be able to articulate yourself well and to stand up to people. But you know, until we get to the other side. Like Trump says, and others have said, the virus is going to disappear on November 3rd. There's going to be no more talk about it. Although I know our governor here is talking about New Year's Eve down in New York City, so a million people are going to be shut out, because usually about a million people show up down in New York City for the dropping of the ball. And so I guess they're going to be doing it, but there's not going to be anyone there. Maybe a couple of people talking or something. I have no clue what they're going to do. But anyway, this is craziness. These people are really panicking, obviously. That's really the bottom line. They're trying to get a civil war going. I think that's pretty clear at this point. They want to create all kinds of chaos with this election coming up, with all of these mail-in ballots and everything.
There's states getting rid of the mask right now. There's a woman in Orange County, California, got rid of the mask in her county with a county resolution. It is not a law. It is not constitutional. The judges are saying that it's not constitutional. If you refuse to wear it and they get a cop to bust your head, it will not prevail in the court. I mean, it doesn't mean you won't get your head busted, but you get an early retirement because you can sue them. Because it does, it never prevails in the court because they have no right to uphold it. It's not a law. It's a recommendation. And especially if you have a health problem, they're not even supposed to question you. So that, I mean, that doesn't mean they won't bang your head, they won't arrest you, but most of them won't. I go to the store, they say, "Where's your mask?" I says, "I'm exempt, I don't need one." And they say, "Well, yes, you do." I said, "Well, call the police, go ahead." They never do. I said, "Go ahead, call the police, they can't enforce it. They don't know what to do." So I don't even know that there really is a fine. You know, this is an edict. We don't live by edicts in America. This is an edict from the governor. And as far as Cuomo goes, he should be up on trial by New Year's because he killed all those people by putting them in the nursing home. So I don't think we got to worry about there being no New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I agree with that. Look, once we get past the election, all this craziness is going to end. And look, the arrests will come soon. And it appears that there's going to be a lot of people arrested.
Huh? That's right. And there's going to be lots and lots of lawsuits. There's that German lawyer that sued Volkswagen and also sued Deutsche Bank. He's coming over here to America now to sue them for the COVID test, which he claims is not a valid test. He says it's an IQ test, and if you take it, you're an idiot because it's a PCR test and it's going to come out positive 99% of the times. Even the papayas come out positive. So if you had the flu shot or you had the flu in the past 4 years, you're going to say test positive. And so they go, "Oh, new cases." Well, they're asymptomatic cases. Nobody's dying. What's the death rate? They say, "Oh, we got a new rash of COVID." There's nobody that has any symptoms.
Yeah, there's been zero hospitalization and zero deaths.
It's a lie from hell. They're so stupid. And you know when the mask is going to stop is when you take it off. Mm-hmm. It's up to us to take it off and refuse to wear it, that's all. And dare the cops to go ahead and do something. That's where I'm at, but, you know, I'm a little nuts, too, so don't go.
No, that's true, yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? They never, I say, "Go ahead, call the cops, get them right now, I'll sit right here and wait." And they never do. So.
Okay, let's end the masks and this virus. I'm so tired of hearing, turn on my radio, I hear it, I go on, everywhere you go. Oh, it's just insane. All right, anyway, Jen, by the way, did you get your mic going? And if he doesn't pipe in, maybe there's another question, Curry? You know what you should do is take the latest question, the latest question first. So whenever it came in lately, recently.
Well, this one the next one came in yesterday.
Okay.
And it says, "Hello, I am," and he gives his name, and he's needing a recommended bank to open a bank account for my trust. Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of banks don't want to open up a trust unless it is a fictional trust set up by, you know, through government, setups, you know, go and register with the state and do all those things. But if you're going to do a common law trust and do it yourself, and then try to open a bank account, it's almost near impossible. I did get one opened up, and I guess the bank was sleeping or something. But then the bank moved out of the area, and I had to go to another bank. And that bank wouldn't do it, and I couldn't find a bank to do it. So what I did is I did a DBA just so that I can get the necessary paperwork to call it the National Liberty Alliance, and then it's still a trust, and it's written up as a trust. But you do what you can to make things work and get where you can go. But it is difficult. There are certain trusts that they will allow, but again, they're corporate-type trusts, really. They're not common law trusts. Okay, what else we got?
Okay, I have two more, one very long and one very short. You want
Let's take the shorty first.
Okay, how can you have the common law jury as a party while at the same time be the judges? How does the court allow this?
Well, if you're the party, you're not the judge. We have to get a trial jury, a petit jury. Like we're going into the court as the grand jury, the sureties of peace, and we expect that if things go correctly, that we should get maybe summary judgments, which would be fine as long as they're on our behalf. No other summary judgments are permitted, only summary judgments in order to protect liberty. In a federal court, that is. And anything other than that, then we need to go to trial. And then we pull a trial jury, and they come up with the final decision. So the grand jury is not making the final decision as the judge. They are coming in as the plaintiff on behalf of the people in the case of what we're doing right now anyway. And we are doing lots of things in the court up in Northern District, filing papers and filing you know, habeas corpuses and joinders to our case. You know, the case we did right now, it's been proposed to me, and we're aware of different ways. We thought about different ways to approach this. And some of the ideas were, why take it into their courts? Why don't we take it over back into our court? Because they're not going to listen. Well, sure, we can do that, and we could take it to our court, and then we can send them a copy or send someone a copy and move. But that's not that's not accomplishing our goal. You see, the goal is to prove that these people have shut down the common law courts. Our goal is to take these into the courts and either get justice, which is very, very rare, or be denied that justice. And every time they deny a just court, it's just another nail in their coffin. And so it's a record. You know, we're going into, we filed hundreds of papers, literally. And of course, they've ignored most of them. They don't respond. Now we're going to sue this court directly, which we'll talk about that in a little while. But anyway, the idea is to try to take it back into our court. But we will eventually end up in our court. We will probably eventually end up with more indictments. And we will continue on. We will move into the appellate court for the sole purpose with the mandamus, commanding them to command the lower court to be obedient to the law and open up these courts of record. This federal judge, well, again, we'll get into that in a little while. So anyway, that's where we're heading with that. But hopefully I answered the question. What exactly was the question again?
Why are we the judge?
Oh, okay. I answered it.
The jury,
yep.
So to speak.
Right. Yeah, we're not the jury. We're just here on behalf of the people, representing the people from the perspective of the grand jury, which is the sureties of the peace. Okay, last question.
Okay, it is kind of long. The final question is, how should or can this family get their daughter back under their control? How can they prevent the hospital's doctor from administering what they believe to be harmful to their daughter? So I can start. There's three paragraphs.
Well, I don't know if you can give a synopsis, or do you have to read it all, do you think?
Well, Ellie is the name of the daughter. She's 14. She had a very bad episode of Crohn's. While they were away from their home in Nashville, and the hospital called child services on the family because the parents called her Crohn's specialist in Pennsylvania to ask if it would be okay to administer it, and he said, no way, that will do more harm than good. He wants to see her back home to keep what she is doing. Apparently, in Tennessee, if a parent is not allowed to, does not allow a doctor to give a proper drug that they think will help to their child, they can take custody of the child. Now they have an officer standing at her door so the parents cannot take their child away. If they do leave the premises with her, they will be arrested and charged with kidnapping.
Well, they should, I would, you know, if have they tried the sheriff? This isn't the sheriff guarding the door, is it?
No, apparently not.
Okay, well, first order of business, I'd call the sheriff and tell the sheriff you're being held captive and you know, go through the story there and what's going on. That's one possible way to deal with the problem.
Wouldn't that be a habeas corpus on her?
Yeah, that would be the next step, is a habeas corpus. But again, that's going to take a little time, but it can be done. We could do it relatively quickly if they get a hold of Jim, get all the paperwork done, and we could probably get it out in 2 or 3 days maybe, I don't know. But as long as we get everything we need. So that's another thing that could be done. You know, it's pretty bad. I'm familiar with a family.
They live in a different state, don't they?
Yeah, I'm familiar with a family some years back that was traveling, and the parents, I don't recall the exact story, but somehow both parents ended up in the hospital, and family whatever they call that, services came in and took the children because they were traveling with their children. And I believe the mother was only hospitalized for a day or so. But one of the children had some tooth problems and one had to get some dental work. And they said that that was abuse, and they took the children away. And they fought that last state for quite some time, and they had to go home. They left their children, were fighting from another state. And, you know, it was a real horror story. And I don't know exactly whatever happened with that family and what the final results was. But that kind of thing does exist and does happen, and that's pretty frightening. These people are Nazis, and we need to put them in jail. Yeah, I'd like to do a habeas corpus if they want. Let's get the names of all these people, get the cop at the door's name, get everybody's name, we bring it into the court, and then we will indict every single person right up the line, including the hospital administrator, all the people involved, okay? If you can get all that information to Jim, and it would be intake at nationallibertyalliance.org, just send a note to intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. Jim will get the message, and just give him your phone number, ask him to call so you can communicate it by phone. And he'll assist you with all the paperwork that has to be gotten together, and then we'll pursue that. While you're doing that, call your sheriff and talk to your sheriff. You know what? Maybe a connection with Dar. Maybe someone should try to get hold of a Dar and see if Dar might make a call to that sheriff for her.
They should find out from their hometown sheriff if he's constitutional. Because
they need to find somebody.
Home, if they could get her home, doesn't mean that their state's going to cooperate with them extraditing her. Because I would kidnap her, but that's me.
That's right. Me too.
I would kidnap her. I wouldn't give a shit if I had to go to Mexico.
Yeah,
but
me too.
But
we shouldn't say that. You know,
I understand.
It is emotional, and we're not really in that position.
I'm telling you, that's me. That's what I would do. I'm not telling them to do that because that's, you know, you could get killed doing that. Obviously.
Right. Yeah, well, let's keep our senses about it. Look, there's a couple of things that could be done. And at the end, if that's what has to be done, if you can think you can get away with it and do it, then, hey, I'd be out of state quick.
That's their child.
I know, exactly.
I mean, you defend your child to the death. Who do they think they are? I mean,
well, they think they're the village to raise the child.
You know,
you know,
I'll give them the village. You know what? Village people. You know, it's like, anyway, I'm going to stop before I get
in
trouble.
Yes, let's not get us in trouble.
Okay.
All right, look, the sensible thing is try to get hold of the sheriff. Hopefully he's constitutional. Explain the situation. Tell him, I'm going to take my child, take that child home, and take care of the business. We don't need to be here. And but again, get a hold of Jim. Intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. That should establish, you know, then you can make the connections. And even if you start the paperwork and then you end it because maybe the sheriff, takes care of the business for you, you should start the paperwork anyway while that's happening. Okay. All right, let me just talk about a few things. Do we have any announcements, first of all? Jan, did you ever get your mic back on? Oh, I think Jan's not even on right now either. I saw him come in and out a few times.
He's been in a lot of trouble lately.
Yeah, last few weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Anyway, look, we had a hearing this past week. Let me get to the page where we were at. In a second, remember, grand jury action against YouTube. Yeah, we had an action against YouTube. In that process, well, before we even do that, let me see. Well, I guess we should just take a look at that. We did come in. There is a copy of the action, a copy of the objection that we wrote. And this judge was really, really working very quickly to try to shut us down and she didn't even want us to talk, But we did get our 2 cents in, and it did get pretty bad in the sense that she said there is no natural law. And I'll tell you, this judge is a federal judge. You gotta believe a federal judge is educated far more than any of these other judges. Because they really have to be educated in all of these codes and stuff and all of the U.S. Supreme cases, court cases, and all these different things, American jurisprudence. So they're on a higher level. And they should understand more what's going on than any of these other judges. And you got to believe that they would know what a court of record is. This judge, when we talked about a court of record, said, this is a court of record. We're keeping a record of this court. I mean, I just couldn't believe my ears when they said that. Now, we did respond to that after she went on this whole long, she went on and on and on, and then I had opportunity to speak again. But we did have some problems. We had a lot of people in the courtroom. The last time I hit the button to see how many people were in there, because you hit a button if you get to star something, whatever it was. But you can find out how many people in a room. It was 60 people. But by the time it came to the end, I think there was a lot more than that. But if there were 60 people, that was pretty good. Now, we did have some people who were speaking, and I don't know why they didn't silence the whole room and just open up for those people who should be able to speak. So if we do this again, people, you cannot speak. You have to be silent. You're there to listen and listen only. If people want to pipe in, they think they have something to say and to something to participate and add to what we're doing, then get involved with National Liberty Alliance. Let us know that you have a background in these things, and let's get talking. Let's see if we're compatible in our understanding and thinking, and we're all on the same page. We go into a court, we have a strategy. We have I don't want to call it a philosophy, but we have positions, okay? And we have a strategy, and there's an order of business to follow. And when people come in and start to interrupt on that kind of a situation, of course, it's a problem. It throws everybody off base to begin with. It throws me off base to begin with. It causes havoc in the room, and especially when we already went through in the beginning of the case that there's only two speakers that are going to be speaking. If someone wants to be a speaker and thinks they know these things, then get in touch with us, get connected, let's get to know you, and you can participate. We need people with knowledge. We need people who understand what's going on. It is about jurisdiction, and I know some people were frustrated in the sense of, what are you doing in this court anyway? You know, well, we're there to put the nails in the coffin. That's what we're there for. We're there to build a case. Everything we have been doing since we entered into the courts has been to build a case against the judiciary, to prove the fact that they are ignoring the people, that they are denying us due process, that they are hiding and would concealing natural law courts, and that they are pursuing, really, in the civil law, which is Babylonian law. And it's the law of the city. It's the law to control the people. And one of the other things, and we never really got, because we had to move so quickly trying to get words in, because she was really moving to shut us down. And eventually she did kind of just shut. Matter of fact, she just went silent and left. She walked out of the courtroom. And maybe about 60 seconds later than they ended the tape, the recording. But in any event, she did commit treason, and she did deny that there is. She said that natural law has been abrogated. It's not there. It's not for us to have. I forget the exact words. The tape, we got a copy of the tape. It's about 20 minutes long. And what we are going to do is, we were going to do it this Monday tonight, but really I was kind of moving too quickly. Next Monday night, at, I think, 7:30. What do you think, Gerard? You want to do it at 7:30? We'll pull people together and see if we can get an indictment on this judge?
Yeah.
Does that work for you, 7:30?
Yeah.
Okay, next Monday night, in the room here, I know that's when the national leaders get together at about 7:30, but we're going to take the room that night, and we're going to consider an indictment. So anybody that wants to get onto the grand jury to sit to make a decision, and as long as you're one of the people, you can come. We have, about 9,000 members, and you don't even have to be a member of ours, really. You could be just a listener here and want to come in and be on the grand jury. You're welcome. We will play the tape. It's a 20-minute tape. We'll send out an email and put a page with a little bit of information, maybe. Let me think about this.
So you actually got that from them, John?
No, let's not talk about that.
Oh.
We can't play the tape in public, so it's not open for broadcasting, but certainly is open for the grand jury to sit and listen to.
Oh.
And the grand jury is going to listen to that, and then we're going to make a decision at the end of that tape whether we are going to do a an indictment on her and what the charges will be. I mean, you know, there's felony rescue to begin with, there's subversion and treason, and there's concealment, and there's probably a few other things we can tap in there. So we'll list out the charges. We'll get a page up on what the charges will be, and we'll probably put some notes concerning those charges. But the proof is in the pudding, which is actually, obviously, the recording itself. So when we play the recording, we're going to take a vote and make a decision. And if we end up with an indictment, we will file the indictment. Meanwhile, this week, I'm going to be preparing papers to sue directly. We told her, told the court, you know, she said, well, you could take this to the appellate court. And I said, well, we don't appeal nothing. Well, we don't have to appeal. We don't have to appeal. We can sue the court directly. So we're going to sue you and sue this court directly.
She didn't say anything to that, did she?
No, she was silent on that.
She was silent on that, right?
Yeah. And at that, from about that point forward, we started talking about treason. I told her, this is treason what you're doing. And she was silent from that point forward. I forget exactly, you know. Let's let the tape speak on that night, you know, on what's going on. So.
Well, I'm really sorry.
You're sorry? What are you sorry about, Jim?
Oh, I'm...
Mute yourself. Okay, anyway... we will get into that on next Monday, 7:30. I will send an email out in the next day or two. I'll create a page first and put a link in there for people to get to that page. And then we'll get into more detail. Now, next Monday, I wanted to do it this Monday, but I just couldn't get it done in time. I've been working on all of the different acts and different things of subversion going all the way back to the beginning of our nation, 1776. And then work through to show all of the subversive acts against against our Constitution and how these things were building up, and then lay out the plan. Now, there's been some people, and we've had people with us, and there's probably people with us right now that believe in this idea of what Anna von Ritz is doing. And, you know, we've been involved with her way back when. We just don't work out together. You know, it's oil and water. So there's no way that we can harmonize in what we're doing. And just to make one point, I think there are three steps that need to be done that she requires in order to go through the process that she's doing. And one of those steps is to give up your citizenship. Another one of those steps that they want to do, step two, goodness, I forget what step three is, but this may be step three.
Your voting registration, John.
Well, all of that works with your citizenship. You're done. You can't vote no more. And we're going to show how that is not the case. You know, we are citizens, and I do know that they rob the meaning of the word, and they try to make it mean something else. Very much aware of that. Okay, that's why we're in court. We generally use the word people, we're one of the people. But nevertheless, and the word citizen is used like six or seven times in the Constitution. We the people gave the authority of the legislator to write legislation in order for people to become citizens of this nation and what the process is. And when you become a citizen of the United States, it means that you're a citizen of every state of this union because you can live anywhere you want. You can pick up tomorrow, move to another state. You don't have to report to nobody. You are a citizen of that state. So wherever you the lay your hat is where your citizenship is. So, but one of the big things, really important things, part of the process, is they want to rewrite our founding papers. We'll start from scratch. And that is total insanity. I don't think a lot of the people that have been following Anna von Ritz really understand that. And I read through her website, and because we've had some discussions in the background. There also a claim that there's two different constitutions, that there's one done in 1787, let me think, 87, and the other one in 1789. And that is not true. I never believed that because I never saw that. And about a year or two ago, somebody was making that argument. They said they'd get me a copy of the other one, and they never did. Recently, I had a conversation with someone, and they're supposed to get a copy. And you know, I don't know if they tried to get it to me yet, but I did find two copies, one 1787 and one 1789 on Anna von Ritz's website. And I opened them up. You know, I got dual screens here. I opened them up, put one on each screen, and I went through them all the way through. I found no difference. And as a matter of fact, the big thing is this, is that the Constitution was completed in 1787, but of course, you know, George Washington didn't become president, and the election didn't take place. You know, it took some time. Once the Constitution was done, then they started to organize for the election and bringing things together. Planning on, you know, where that seat of government is going to be and so on and so forth. So they had a lot of work to do, I'm sure. But the 1789 Constitution is actually the 1787 Constitution. It's the same one. Now, I know the one that I have been studying out of it, in the end of it, it does give a date, and the date is the signatures on the Constitution, and it was 1787. Now, they did agree to add the Bill of Rights, and that came in 1791. So we have the Declaration of Independence, we have the Constitution, and we have the Bill of Rights. So I still have not found or seen anything different in the Constitution, and I've been studying and reading off of and appreciating. You know, the Constitution really governs our government, and that's the key. It doesn't govern us. It governs our government, and people need to understand that. And, you know, we're running our campaign for constitutional sheriffs, and let me open my page up for that. So donate to Save Our Republic, NLA's campaign for constitutional sheriffs. And basically what it is buying a book for your sheriff. And I certainly hope everybody knows about this now, but the sales are not going as good as I would hope. I mean, we really have a lot of work to do. We have to accomplish these goals. We have to educate our sheriffs. There are two plans to save this nation, and I'm not aware of any other plan than these two plans. And if anybody is aware of any other plan, bring that up to us because we'd like to look into it. But there are only two plans. The first plan is a plan put together by, I guess, military intelligence, Donald Trump, the Patriots, okay? And Donald Trump said, our movement is about replacing a failed and corrupt political establishment with a new government controlled by you, the American people. And he also went on and said, I believe this was to the, hang on a minute, what's up? All right, I'll be in a minute. I'll tell him I'll call him in 2 minutes. The second thing he had said, and this was at the United Nations, he says, in America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. If the righteous many do not confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph. Okay? And so we are the many. And we have to go after and confront the wicked few. But here it is that Donald Trump is working to give power back to the people. The problem is that the people don't know how to take the power. They don't know how to take political power, judicial power, and even the power of the militia. They don't know how to do these things. And the first order of business is for those of us who are learning this stuff early. We need to be prepared. We need to be the people that step up and do what we have to do to take these positions, even if they're only for a temporary, for a short amount of time. But we have to step up and do what has to be done. So President Trump is doing what he's got to do, but now the people have got to educate themselves and do what they've got to do. And, we know, let me go back to the front page. You know, we know what Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, you know, forget about it. He says, I know no safer depository of the ultimate power of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, The remedy is not to take it from them. Of course, that's their remedy, taking it from us. We have not been educated in these things at all. Not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. And now there was a couple other quotes I want to read about Jefferson, and I think this is it here. Hang on a second. Yes, if a nation expects, and I started off with this, but if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. So we have to be enlightened, and we have to be enlightened through a proper education. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently. Let me repeat that. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. So this is what National Liberty Alliance is all about, is to educate the people, to bring us into the positions and to the places to take the power, the control of our government. Because if all the people come together, and just enough, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participates. And 20, 30, 40,000 people is more than enough to get this thing going. But those people have to be people taking certain positions, and on that group of people is our sheriffs. And that's where it starts. We need to be educating our sheriffs and ourselves. We must get this book into the hands of the sheriff. And, of course, we're talking about the book Government by Consent. If there's anybody new here, we wrote a book called Government by Consent. I believe it's about 1,000 pages. And we're taking pre-orders right now, and we are taking orders for our sheriffs. So everybody should be buying at least their sheriff a book. And if two or three people buy the same sheriff a book, we'll just purchase a book for another sheriff next door or whatever. We got 3,000, approximately 3,000 sheriffs, so we need to get 3,000 books into the hands of these sheriffs. Now, we are working with sheriffs. There is a sheriff and a small group of sheriffs, and they're working together, building across this nation to educate other sheriffs. We're working with those sheriffs. We've been giving them information on how to run juries and grand juries and what the proper way to approach that is. And also, Brent has been working with them also. He's been working with us, and so we've been working with them. So we're working to try to educate our sheriffs, and we have sheriffs already working with sheriffs to educate the sheriffs. And they're going to write a letter on behalf of, to other sheriffs, on behalf of this book, and we will attach that letter to each book that we send out to all these sheriffs. So we have sheriffs, talking to sheriffs and trying to get them together to organize themselves across the nation and educate themselves, okay? And at the same time, we need to connect with them. When we have sheriffs that are educated, especially with this particular book, the way we wrote it up, because we covered everything in this, we covered up the people, working in the courts, in the political process, in the militia, in our counties, working with the sheriff. So once we have sheriffs getting active in this, and we got a couple of people getting active in this, that should go very quickly. All of the liberty groups at that point will connect within those counties, and we should grow very quickly at that point. And we've done a lot of work preparing for meetings within your counties. If you go into People's Duty, for instance, where's my mouse? There it is. If you go into People's Duties, for instance, we have a tab that says Organizing Your County. And so we give details on organizing your county, how to organize it, the things that need to be done, the information and the knowledge you need. We also got a lot of videos that could be played at meetings, which are educational videos that we made. which get into the discussion of the different things that we're doing, the grand jury, the trial jury, the militia, the committee man, working with the sheriff, and so on. So all of this information necessary in order to achieve the goals, to organize the grassroots, for the people to take control of their government, to have the knowledge and the understanding on how to do it, okay, is all available on our website right now. Now we need the people to get involved. So please, if you haven't connected yet and you haven't bought your sheriff a book, and you should buy yourself a book, even if you buy the sheriff a book now and another time you buy yourself a book, right now the book is going for $50. I was told by the publisher it's going to be $48.95. I just had a meeting with my publisher at the end of last week, and I'm expecting to have another meeting by the end of this week, and I'm trying to get that price down, so that's part of the discussion. But I don't set the price for the book. It is a big book. It's a very big book. So it's power-packed. And it really gives you a great education and understanding of our Constitution, the political process, the judicial process, the law, common law, where it came from, the rules of common law. I mean, it covers everything. And it talks about, equity, what our government is involved with the federal courts, which are equity courts. So you'll get a really good understanding. And I think I'm going to follow behind with this book on a book, Court Access, which will really be to teach people how to get into a court, you know, the paperwork. I mean, we have a lot of this stuff on our website already, but I think I need to do it in a different way. And so I might write a book. I'm planning on writing a book on that too. So we'll get that out hopefully sometime over the winter. I think a lot of that is really already written because we've been writing things for years now on all these different subject matters. So please, everybody, let's get connected here with this sheriff movement here. Let's talk to your neighbors. Tell your neighbors about it. See if you can get them to give a donation. Everybody's got friends, everybody's got neighbors, everybody's got family. Talk to them. You know, maybe you can get two or three people who will throw up $50 to buy three more sheriffs. If you can get three people to do that, you got three more sheriffs that you can send in for books for sheriffs. But we must get these books into the hands of the sheriff. The other thing that we need to do, and I'm going to be working a strategy out with my publisher this week, as I mentioned, I'm going to be meeting with them, and a strategy on how to get to the bestsellers list. But one of the things is you have to sell a certain number of books within a week. Now we're doing pre-sales, and I really want to take these pre-sales and hit them up and buy them all at the same time. So what we're probably going to do is I'm probably going to buy the books and have them delivered to me, and then I'll ship them from here, instead of shipping them from there, because I want to get these books purchased and out within a week. They had mentioned that, they'll look every week to see what book is selling at the highest point, and then if you've sold more than the other books, then you're going to be able to get onto certain bestsellers lists. But in any event, no matter how we go about it, whether it's done within a week or a period of time, we're focusing on trying to sell 5,000 to 6,000 books, and more than that if possible, by the time the book is released. The book is due to be released in November, December at the worst case, but we are shooting for November. It looks like sometime in November it looks like it's probably going to come out. And so we need to get these pre-orders done for that also, because once we get onto the bestsellers list, okay, then that opens up to all the chain stores. Okay, they'll all start to purchase those books and start stocking them. And also, at the same time, it'll start to get into libraries. And this gives us exposure, okay? And that's what we need is exposure. I think the timing will be just perfect. Government by Consent is the name of the book. This will be around the election time. The election will be fighting the election probably at that point in time. And heading towards the United States Supreme Court for a final decision. I can see that coming. And I think a lot of arrests, some arrests, I do still think some arrests are going to be done this October, and more, of course, after the elections. So the timing of the book is going to be coming out at the right time. it's going to be the right recipe, the right pill, so to speak, for the people that they need to take back their government. So again, everybody needs to get involved in this book campaign to educate our sheriff, sheriff campaign, to educate our sheriffs and themselves. Okay, I guess that's about all I have. I got some things I got to take care of, Gerard, so I'm going to pass things over to you. I don't know if, is Brent here?
I don't know.
All right, I don't see Brent, so you might want to just go into open forum. I don't know if you're going to share your screen. I can leave mine up for a little while, or maybe Terry can share if you can't share. Can you share?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
All right, well, Gerard, can you share? If not, then Terry will share for you and try to, sort of track you when you're looking at trying to do something on the web page if you need to show something.
I got my other computer open, so I can share.
Oh, okay. All right.
So.
Okay, so I'm going to pass it over to you. I don't see Brent, so keep an eye open for him. With that, I'll pass it to you, and I'll be back in a short while, I'm sure.
Okay. Let me see. I don't know what screen I got up here to share. Okay. Anyway, let me move over to my other computer. Let me see who we got in the queue. Okay, I'm going to start opening the floor up. Got
Greg?
Kevin, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Greg, can you hear me?
Hello? Are you there? Kevin,
like
doesn't say from what.
Queue, please press 1.
Kevin, you've been unmuted, Kevin.
Can you hear me now?
You're kind of low. And you're echoing. You got your speaker phone on?
Yeah. How about better now?
That's better.
Okay, great. Just a couple of points. I was at the meeting that occurred with the judge there, and the way things went didn't seem too good at all. The audio on the judge's end was much louder than John's audio, and that wasn't fair to begin with. I was wondering also if there's any way to post the judge's photo on the website.
That's a good idea. I don't know if they got her photo must appear on a web somewhere on one of the Supreme Court sites, no?
Uh-huh.
We should see if we can get it.
Okay. And it's a great idea. I was going to ask about the recording itself, but I guess John hit that point on Monday, 7:30, so I'll be listening to that.
Right.
And that's pretty much all at this point.
I think, they say they don't want you recording and rebroadcasting the hearings, but those tapes are available, I believe, just like a transcript is available, either through FOIA request or whatever. It's public information. I don't see that they can hide it.
Sure.
You just can't rebroadcast it, that's all.
Yeah, another thing, there were quite a few people that dialed in to be at the meeting. John was mentioning some 60 or so. It seemed like they were kind of trying to limit the amount of people that were logging on, and I didn't think that was fair at all.
Well, I don't know how big that switchboard is. I'm sure they limit it. It's not unlimited, for sure. We did have 60 people in the count when John checked it, and we don't know if there was more than that. But, for a court hearing, believe it or not, that's a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a fantastic showing, but I thought there were even more people that wanted to announce themselves, and I just didn't think it was fair that, you know, these people did make time to come to the to the courtroom, and they were kind of locked out. They weren't even to be acknowledged by the court.
Well, we made the mistake of telling them to announce themselves. They really didn't. The only ones that needed to be announced were the ones who were going to speak. So that was a mistake that we made by telling people to announce themselves. So it created a little bit of chaos because people were coming in and saying, I'm so-and-so, and they didn't want that. The court didn't want that at all. They were just looking for who the speakers were. And that's one of the reasons why she should have been able to keep control of that. If you know who the speakers are, you should just mute everybody else. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everybody was there just to listen. They weren't there to talk.
Also, it was mentioned that the time that we should call in apparently was actually at the time where the meeting started. So that kind of threw everything off, you know?
Well, there was a bunch of people in there earlier. You know what I mean? They let you in earlier if you logged in early.
I see. Okay.
But I don't know. Once the switchboard got full, you might be dialing in. They might not let you in. I don't know. I didn't talk to anybody that tried to get in that said they couldn't get in. But I'll imagine there was a lot. Because I'm sure that that thing, you know, maybe they go to 100 people and then they knock it off. I don't know what their number is, you know. Of course, you would think on an electronic hearing like that, they should be... Look, they have 4,000 people on these teleconferences, so they do have the capability of having many, many people on a teleconference. You know, they gave us this teleconference because of the COVID and all that stuff, so they didn't control it. She lost decorum of the courtroom because she didn't control it. She didn't want to control it. She liked the chaos, I think. You know, it gave her a good excuse to walk out, you know, and not listen. Unfortunately, but not that she was going to listen anyway, but, you know, we wanted to get some...
She really took control at the beginning and didn't let John speak the way it should have been. It doesn't seem like it was at all equal time rendered.
Right. So, anyway, we're gonna have to sue them in their court. We're not going to appeal it like John said, and we're going to indict her for what she did. And she wasn't even supposed to be there. That's another story. She should have recused herself. She refused to recuse herself because she did not answer the jurisdiction problem, which they have to do. That's a fundamental, you know, thing, the jurisdiction. And she cannot answer it. It has to be answered by the higher court, by her bosses or whatever. She can't say, I have jurisdiction because I got the robe on and I got the gavel. That's not how it works, you know?
Right.
So once it's challenged, it has to be stated, and that's going to have to come from above her. She does not have the authority to say that she has jurisdiction because she says so. And basically, that's what she did, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Sure. I'm looking forward to the Monday 7:30 review of what occurred there. But
right.
Thank you for the question.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you. Okay. Hang on here. Aslu from, I think it's Montana, M-O. Or is that Missouri? M-O.
Good evening. You are.
Yes.
Aslu from Missouri.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. I'm just calling in about the letter that I got from Kansas Department of Revenue that I had been asking questions. They did not respond. They didn't send me the right response. You know, I was asking for the 4490 and 56, but they sent me the same letter. And my question is, should I do an affidavit of non-response and or a default?
Well, if they sent you the same form letter, they didn't respond, technically.
Right, you know, right.
I mean, that is a default, I think. And it is a non-response. I don't know what to tell you with the file. I would say a default is probably more powerful than a non-Muslim.
More appropriate, okay.
You know what I mean?
And then, okay.
Anyway.
So do the affidavit of default.
Yeah, and then, they say, well, we responded. No, you didn't. You sent the same stupid form letter that you responded with last time, which was not a non-response.
Right.
You know,
so should I, send it, do it and send it, or file it in the court and send it?
I think
send,
you need to file it in the court, otherwise it doesn't do much.
Okay, what, another question, what court should I file that with?
Well, what court are you in right there? I mean, are you file papers with you or for you?
I think they have a circus court in here in Waynesville.
Say that again. Did we do an amicus curiae for you in that court?
No. It wasn't the foreclosure. This is about they said that I received $50,000 in 2015, which I, object to it, and that I asked for the proof of claim, but they didn't send any. They didn't respond to that.
Because they don't have it. That's why they didn't respond to it.
Right. So I'm asking, when I do the default, what court should I that under?
Well, that's a good question, because you know you're in that court wherever you are. I don't know what court you're in with that. What is this?
It's the circuit court.
The circuit court.
Yes.
Well, I think you need to file it with them first, but you need to move it into the you got to move it into the federal court. You
into
know
the
what I mean?
Federal court. Okay.
Yeah, because it's they violated your due process, basically. And that's where
right.
you're going to get your remedy in the federal court. So really, that's where you need to go with it. And you need to talk about just that thing right there, that they did not respond, they violated your due process. Actually, that's a pretty good case you got right there, if you think about
okay.
it.
Okay.
You know what
okay.
I mean? Because they just out and out blatantly didn't give you what they're supposed to have by law.
Right.
So
right.
I think it's much more powerful to take it in the federal court and see what happens. You know, of course, you're
okay.
going to send them a copy of all that. They're going to get copies, you know.
Right, and then I can file it with the affidavit that I sent to request the proof of claim then, right?
Right.
With that default. Okay. One more question, please. Let's see. Is there any process NLA has on their website that I can study and prepare myself for that, for the default?
Well, actually, I'm not sure, but that's a good
okay.
question, because I do think we talk about that 4490. I think we have paperwork on it. You're going to want to go in there and look at that and see the language, and yeah, you'll be able to copy some of that, or you could
okay.
even, you could use our form. I'm pretty sure that John had that.
Yeah, is that an IRS thing? I just got back.
Yes, it's Department of Revenue, Kansas Revenue.
Yeah, for them to do anything, there's two forms. You can put them in Google, it'll pop right up, but we do have them on our website.
Oh, she asked
under
for it,
education.
They refused. They already refused, John. They
refused
already defaulted.
What?
She asked her, she said, you need to have a 4490. She asked them two forms, and they sent her the same form letter they sent her to get her here. It was
yeah,
a
non- well, you can pull the form. I mean, last time we won a case in Iowa against IRS, and that I think is one of the things that assisted us, is we had those 4490s and 56. I included them in my paperwork and said, this is what needs to be done, be filled out. And they know it's true. They know it's true.
So
they have
that's what you should send them then.
Okay.
You know,
then I'll just resend that with
the fiduciary authority. The other one is a proof of claim. Now, the fiduciary authority, if they've gone into your accounts or played around with your money and they didn't take you into court or anything to enable to get into your bank account or whatever the case may be, they need fiduciary authority to do that, and they don't have it. And that's a problem for them because it's a crime.
Right, right. And so I can just get those two forms and resend the affidavit that I did before, or just send another letter with it.
Well, yeah, those forms, you again, if you put form 4490, write the word form 4490 and form,
right.
And then after that do form 56 in Google and you'll find it. Now, what I have noticed, though, because I Googled it recently and, you know, I saw the forms, but you couldn't print them. They wouldn't let you print them or they were kind of foggy and you couldn't cut and paste them. But we do have copies of those on our website under education, I believe. You should find them. Under education, and then there's court forms, process, and procedures. I think it's on that page. And if not, I'll try to put some up there. But I'm pretty sure you'll find them there.
John, she's asking, should she file them in this court or should she take it? I thought that, you know, should she move it into the federal, into the upper court?
Well, what is the court? What
district,
is the situation?
She's in the district court now. In the district.
Yeah, but is it an IRS problem or some other problem?
It's the same. It's the Department of Kansas Department of Revenue. They sent me the same letter that they sent before, and I requested 4490 and 56, but they sent me a non-respond where they, you know, they sent the same letter. So my question was that should I do a default? Or should I just send those forms?
Well, again, you have to. I can't really say because I don't know exactly what you've done, what you filed, how long ago you filed it, what the response was. There's so much involved to get into that. This is why. Look at everyone that's listening, that especially those who have never been in court and those who have been in court. It's important to get the knowledge that we are trying to give to the people so that we can have a government by consent and you have control over your own life in these courts. And so everybody needs to educate themselves now because the day's going to come, you're going to find yourself in a situation and you need to be able to defend yourself. And so you're kind of stuck in that situation. I don't know exactly what the case is. I don't know the details. I don't know how long it's been since you did what. I don't know if you filed affidavits, if you opened a court of record, if they're suing you, you suing them, or if it's a counter sue. I mean, there's so many things we have to look at to discover, well, where do you go from there then, you know?
No, they haven't. They haven't sued yet. They're just asking for me to, you know, to either pay the amount that they sent or respond why
I got you. So right now you're in the communications. And now is this with the IRS or with state taxes? Which is it with?
Yes, it was the 1099 that I did not receive from HSBC, which is the one that foreclosed my house.
I don't understand. They're trying to foreclose your house?
Yeah, well, they did. They did. HSBC was the one that foreclosed my house, and they saying that I received some money from them, which is $33,000, almost $34,000, which I did not receive anything from them.
So on top of that, they want taxes on that?
Yes. I mean, they said that I received that.
I mean, not only did they take your home and beat you up, they also want to tax you on it. Unbelievable.
Right.
They're saying she got $34,000 in the foreclosure.
They said that I did. And the 1099 was a tax for that I got, what I got.
And they were giving her 1099 on $34,000. You know where that went? That went in some lawyer's pocket probably.
Well, exactly. Or the county.
Exactly. And they're going to tax you on the $34,000 that you supposedly got.
So that's why I'm asking for the proof of claim so they, you know, to bring
you want to do, look, this is what you want to do since you're not in court. You want to do a notice and demand, okay? Notice and demand is just like doing a court case but without using the court. And you have it filed, you know, you serve it on them and you have it served, you know, the same way you would serve a case on someone. You have someone, you know, do an affidavit of service, deposit it into the mail, define what was deposited into the mail. And there are 8 points to a notice and demand. We have copies of that up on our website. Again, you'll find it under education, come down to court forms, process, and instructions. Now, that page won't show up unless you're a premier member, and a premier member is someone that's donating $5 a month or more, and then you can get to that page. Now, that has a notice and demands on there. I got to try to update that page because there's other things I want to put up there, and I think up on that page. Well, let me take a quick look. I think up on this page is the forms 4490 and form 56. But if not, I'll get it up there.
But
if I don't get it up
okay.
there by next Monday, remind me next Monday. But I'll make a note here to get these forms up there. And
okay.
if you notice in demand, and then you default them after 30 days, they're going to default because they always ignore people. And so then you default them, and then you move it into the state court, the local court, with a show cause on why a judgment shouldn't be taken against them. And then you take it from there.
So really,
okay.
She's not in court, so they really didn't default. They're just asking her to pay money on something they claim she got. So
right.
There's really not a court case yet.
Right.
Right. Well, see, I responded with the affidavit to demanding them to produce the 4490 and the 56.
Yeah, that was premature on that, though.
Yes. Okay. So do I need to send that form to them with a demand, or what do I do now then?
Well, again, you know, you need to get educated on it. It's, you know, you have to do all these things correctly, and you know, it sounds like you got time to learn. So start looking at the stuff on that page I told you under education, court forms, yeah. process instructions. Start, you know, kind of going through that, reading the stuff, seeing what's going on, and try to get work out an understanding of how things work, because, you know, you gotta go after the right thing, and you have to keep the case simple, okay? Everything's usually about jurisdiction, okay? And so you want to focus on jurisdiction. And also due process. Those are the two major things. And they can't take anything away from you without due process. And you have to be in your right jurisdiction. And those are the two major things you need to learn about. But you also need to learn to write a notice in demand. We do have one up there. It's written up. You just got to put your details, your information into it. And make sure you cover all those points. Be very specific. Be very careful. And at the end of the day, the end of the paper, you're going to say exactly what you're going to do. If they don't take care of this business, this is what you're going to do. And you have to be very specific and detailed on how much money you're going after them for, denial of this and that. You let them know that if they, you know, ultimately they're denying your due process, they're denying a lot of things. So go through that form and make sure you hit all those 8 points.
Okay.
And then after that, meanwhile, you should be studying, because after that, you got to move it into court. So you got 30 days from the time you get that paperwork done to start learning how the court system works and how to get the papers into the court and open a court of record. Right?
Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, next victim. It looks like Kevin from New York. Oh, hang on, I can't scroll this stupid thing. Kevin, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, I already asked a question, but thank you.
Okay, very good. It looks like Glenn Cullings is next.
Hello?
Yes, you're unmuted. Go ahead. Who
yeah,
is
hi. It's Valerie from Maryland. I had a couple of things I wanted to say. One was last week or the week before, I wanted to ask if John would come on one of the live streams and if you can get my phone number and have him call me. And I tried to email back on the emails that we get to see if he could call, and I put my number in there, but nobody called. And the other thing was I've been having issues with the classes on the computer. For some reason, things aren't working very well. And another thing is I was trying to donate, and that wasn't going through either. And I don't know what the issues are. I don't know what's going on, but I couldn't donate. I was trying to, and I don't have PayPal, So I can't, oh, and I can't print up anything if it does go through on the printer because the printer's not working right. And I have a broken ankle and I can't do anything about it because I can't go anywhere.
So, I don't know why you wouldn't be able to donate or that. I mean,
I don't know why it wouldn't go through. I tried so many times.
I'll have to check. We'll have to tell Carl to make sure that that's working okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a problem like that and you're in there, always try to get a hold of Jan because Jan knows how to get a hold of Carl. And you could describe the problem to him and then maybe he can, have Carl either talk to you or maybe go in and look at it and see what the heck's going on.
Yeah, when I get the emails, I did reply back and put a message in there, but I haven't gotten a message back.
Yeah, I don't know why, what's going on. If it's on your end or if it's on our end. But I would get a hold of Jan and let him go through it with you.
Yeah.
While you're on the phone with him and you're on the computer, just to see.
Yeah, the thing is how to get a hold of him.
Well, Jan's phone number is there, you should be able to dial him and get him.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, next person.
Was that a technical problem she was looking for?
Yeah,
an answer?
She had a technical problem. She couldn't donate and she couldn't
get... Yeah, if you go up to on the top of the page... On the blue bar, right under the blue bar, almost to the middle, it's towards the right side, you'll see tech support. If you click on that, that'll go directly to call, and then call usually responds in 24 or so hours.
Okay.
Okay, so right under, you'll see abuse of courts, right under that on the white, tech support, my account, unsubscribe, add event, calendar, log out, right there on that line.
Okay.
And I'll take care of your business there.
All right. Are you still interested in going on any shows, live stream?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, call me.
She can't get a hold of you. She can't get a hold of you, John.
Yeah, I'm almost impossible. To get me onto a show, you got to get a look at today. I answered my phones and I got absolutely nothing done. So I shut them off. Tomorrow my phones will be off, and I got two or three meetings tomorrow, and I just got writing to do. But to get connected with me or whatever needs to be done, get a hold of Jan. You'll find him under the directory. He's the national leader. Get connected with him. You'll find his phone number there. And I'm looking at it right now. I guess they changed things around. I don't see Jan there right away. Let's see, there's two directories. It should be the same page. It is. Maybe he's further down. I don't know. They move this around.
He does that when he wants a vacation. He moves himself. No.
Well, I don't know. Someone redid the page, so I don't even know where it's at anymore. Let me see. Site contacts? Let me try that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screen right now.
Well, you could send an email to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. And give him your phone
number. I did.
Okay. And if you go to site contacts, you'll see he's got his number up there, too.
Okay.
Site contacts. So site contacts is underneath directory. Directory, site contacts.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next is going to be Barbara from New York. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Hi. Thank you, Gerard. I had two questions. The first was, are you still interested? There were, somebody, like Sean, said something about that after listening to the hearing, you could do an affidavit and write it in and send it in. Are you still interested in that?
Yes. John asked people that were on there that heard it to write an affidavit of what they heard and send it in. Yes.
So that's a listing of facts of what happened?
Yeah, that's right.
What was
exactly.
Said?
On such and such a date, I went on and I heard this and I heard that, you know what I mean? And so you're just going to tell what you heard. No opinions or anything like
no
that.
Opinions.
No opinions. Okay. Just, you know, I mean, in so far as you could say, and the decorum of the court was lost, somebody could say that was an opinion, but I think that that was not, I think that was a pretty accurate, you know, assessment. So I don't even know if you can call that an opinion, but you could say something to the effect that, you know, then there was all this stuff going on and nobody could hear each other and, you know, the decorum of the court. I wouldn't consider that an opinion, really. I mean, it is, but
yeah.
I think it's one that could be, that will fly on that anyway. So,
hey, Gerard, you're coming in real low. Everyone else, you know, if you listen to them at a certain level, and when you come on, you can barely hear you. See if you could raise your volume on your mic.
I don't know. I don't really. Let me see. I don't really.
I can hear.
She can hear me. I have to turn her up. She's coming in really well.
Oh, am I? Am I really? Okay.
Yeah, I got. Okay. And then when John comes in, he blows me out of the water because I had you turned all the way up so I can hear you.
Okay.
But, so maybe both of you are coming in low, huh?
I don't know. You, she seems to be coming in low to me.
Okay.
But my mic, I don't really. I never touch that thing. Let me see.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to. You know?
Yeah, but I don't even know where it is. I don't. Let's see.
Well, you go down the bottom right side. You right click on that little speaker, and you open up the recording devices.
Yeah, I have it here on the sound. Recording devices. And I'm on a wireless headset.
Okay, well, then you should still find it in there, a mic in front panel, or you should find wireless, probably connected on your front panel anyway. And if you click on that and click on properties, you can get to listen levels, and you get to levels. And you have a boost, a microphone.
Yeah, I'm on 80%. Now I'm on
100. Try putting it up at 100.
I just put it on 100. Does it make any difference?
No, not much. How about your boost? Where's your boost at?
I don't know. Where's the boost?
Right below your mic in front panel. You put it at 100%. Right below it has microphone boost.
No, I don't have that. Levels, listen, mine doesn't have that.
All right, well, just talk a little louder or put your mic closer to your face. That's all. Okay, all right. Someone just said you sound much better now, too. So.
All right.
Let's see where we go.
Okie dokie. Okay.
Should I go ahead? Can I go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so, and then once I write down these facts, do I email it to National Liberty Alliance and then you forward it, or how does it work?
Oh, that's fun, Rob. Thank you.
I couldn't hear the question.
She wants to know where to send her affidavit on the court hearing. Did she send it to Jan?
Oh, just send it to mail, mail at nationallibertyalliance.org. And someone will get it, because a lot of people get that. And I should see it. If I miss it, someone else will get it, and they'll make sure I got it. So.
Okay.
No, as a matter of fact, do this. Send it to intake. At nationallibertyalliance.org. Jim will get it.
Okay.
Jim does all of the paperwork for the court cases, so he'll get it, and he's listening now. He knows enough to throw it into my other into my file, and then I'll have it. Okay?
Okay, great. I just wanted to clarify something. She spent so much time on two subjects. Oh, can you hear me?
You should try to get a little closer to your mic because you're very low.
Are you talking to me or to Gerard?
Gerard, can you hear her?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I couldn't. I lost everybody for a minute,
no.
But I got you. I got you now. I got you.
You got me. Okay.
I got everybody. Go ahead.
Okay. She spent tons of time on two subjects. One is She brought up the fact that she shouldn't be recused, and then I have the understanding from what you guys were saying that was really she made that mistake the first time, and so that's over. But she actually mentioned some U.S. code like 28 something, and she said that's the jurisdiction. And then a little minute later, she said, and this is a court of record. So it seemed kind of strange.
Right. Well, you know, when she, the, what she had quoted in USC 28 was the authority to hear a case because of its commercial activities, and you know, there is some, you know, I never had a chance to respond to that because there was so much to respond to, and then she left.
Yeah.
But I was going to bring up the point that gives you subject matter jurisdiction, but it certainly does not give you personam jurisdiction over us, and that would have been, and I'm going to cover that in the paper that we write back to her, because she doesn't, now if we go into a federal court and they have subject matter jurisdiction and the people are involved in that, then it needs to be a court of law. It can't be a court of equity. If it's two fictions, it's a different story, you know, or if it's a government and a fiction, and as long as it isn't the people, you know, contractual things they don't get involved with, that's on a state level. But that was the that was not the jurisdiction. That just gave her the authority to hear the concern on the equity side of things. But again, you know, she didn't have personam jurisdiction, and if she acknowledged and respected our court of record, we could have continued in that court.
Okay. And then the second thing that she took a lot of time on was she said because it was a group, you couldn't represent.
Right.
And then she listed like 15 cases, like it was kind of crazy. I don't know. I would just say that I guess it was. I have a feeling she was off the mark.
Confused and has zero understanding of the Constitution. She may understand all those civil procedure laws and rules and stuff, but zero understanding on the Constitution.
Yeah.
To think that a court of, to first of all, to think a court of record is a court that keeps a record, it's absurd. From you know, to the, when a person who doesn't have experience in any of these things, I can understand how they would think that, but a judge to
a
not
federal,
understand
a
what a court of record is?
A federal judge.
Black,
a federal judge, yeah.
Black's Law, doesn't she have to refer to the current Black's Law? Black's Law's got like three different items, right, that make up a court of record?
Well, a court of record, ultimately, to define a court of record, it's a court that's heard by the people and not by some appointed or elected individual. Okay, it's the people's court. A court of record requires a jury, unadulterated.
Uh-huh.
And that's what a court of record is.
Yeah. Do you think she was just saying that because she wanted to deny?
No, I think she's just that dumb because she was dumb enough to say that natural law is been abrogated, and that was a very dumb thing for her to say in a court where she was being reported not only by the court but us too, and plenty of affidavits on that. That was treason because she's admitting.
Uh-huh.
She's admitting to, you know, denying us our court of law. She's admitting of concealing a court of record.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, we will be, for anybody who comes to that meeting, we're going to be, for those who turned in a little late, we're going to be having a grand jury meeting next Monday. Let me see what date that will be. We will be sending out an email on this. And we'll put a page up, but it's next Monday, the 5th, October 5th, at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We will be having a hearing to consider an indictment on this judge. We will be playing the audio for the grand jury to hear and making a decision. I will send out an email with a link to a page that will write up the charges and some information on this and the time and all the other stuff. But it'll be in this room right here at 7:30. Anybody who wants to sit on that grand jury for a consideration of an indictment, just come on in.
Okay. Can I ask one more quick question about the COVID thing, if I could?
Go ahead.
Okay. My son is he has to have this surgery on his neck as outpatient surgery. So they told him he has to have a COVID test, He's going to have general anesthesia. I'm going to pick him up, but I can't go into the hospital. Just like now, if I take him to an appointment, they won't let me into whatever medical facility.
Well, if you're going to pick him up, they have to let you in.
Okay.
Because he just came off of general anesthesia. He can't be walking around the halls. Either that, they're going to have to wheel him out to your car.
Okay. Is it, what kind of legal basis do they have for keeping me out of a waiting room?
Well,
is there any?
I don't really know that. That they do.
What is the problem? I can't hear.
Her son has to go for surgery. Is he a minor?
No.
Is he under 18?
How old is he?
He's 25.
25.
But it doesn't matter when you.
All right. Well, look. This is what you got to do because I went through this. My daughter had a minor operation recently, and I talked to the surgeon. You know, we all talked, and she's 25, 24, and we all talked, and I said that I needed to be in the, you know, be able to be with her, and not necessarily during the operation, of course, but in the recovery, and in the hospital room for a little while, and so on and so forth. And he made it happen. So
yeah,
either my wife or myself.
That's up to the doctor, though. That's if you got a doctor that will cooperate with that.
The surgeon will cooperate. You know, just they understand.
Okay.
You know, they understand.
But you cannot walk out of a general anesthesia surgery alone. They have to take your son and put him in your arm, so to speak. Or they got to have him on a wheelchair, and they have to deliver him to you because he could get dizzy and fall down and stuff. They're liable.
Well, yeah,
so,
they would give him a
yeah. But bear in mind,
wheelchair.
Bear in mind, if you go there trying to do this without setting it up before the operation, they're going to stop you. You need to talk with the doctor, and he will make the provisions for whatever they agree with you that you need to be there for, whatever the case may be.
Okay. What about saying that he's got to take a COVID test in order to do this thing that has nothing to do with COVID? How can I stop that?
Well, I don't think that they're going to do the operation without that test. My daughter had to go in 2 days before to get that COVID test, and I didn't have a problem with it. And she was found negative with it, so. But, I don't know. The COVID test is not that bad. They don't stick it all the way up. Matter of fact, when my daughter did it, they gave her the Q-tip and said, just stick it up as far as you can and swab it and bring it. That's it. They don't have to go all the way up no more.
But if it's positive, then you get put on a list and...
No, if it's positive, then they may not be able to do anything for 14 days unless it's an emergency. So they're just going to want to make sure that... that it doesn't, that he's just asymptomatic and that he isn't going to develop it. And I presume that's what they're doing. I don't really know.
Rockwell Journal, you know, the Mises Institute just set out. There's an article how there's a bill going through the New York State Legislature saying that if authorities suspect that you have COVID, that they can remove you from your home, put you in a facility, and they
what
can
state are you
whatever.
In?
New York. This is for New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not doing that no more that I know of. Maybe down in New York City, but they're not doing that anymore that I know of in New York.
Well, first of all, if you have asymptomatic COVID, the test is probably a bullcrap test anyway.
In other words,
it's a false positive. And they already know, the doctors know that if it's asymptomatic, they've never had an asymptomatic person give COVID to another person. They've never documented that. And that word is starting to get out there. This PCR test is such a bunch of baloney. It's ridiculous.
Oh, God.
If he hasn't had a flu shot or he hasn't been sick in the past 4 years, he probably won't test positive, you know?
Well, he did. He got very sick, actually. He got a high fever for like 2 days.
He's probably already immune. He's probably already had it and got over it. But he may test positive because of that. I can't tell you that for sure. But that's the problem. You know, you have immune people testing positive. Go, oh, COVID.
Yeah.
He couldn't give. He could. He doesn't have enough COVID in his system to give it to a flea. What they're doing is they're taking the RNA, which doesn't mean anything. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the surgeon, these doctors need to educate themselves. That's the problem. You know, but that's I think I would let them take the test, and of course, if it comes out positive, then you have to start fighting. You know, he says take it again. Okay. He doesn't have any symptoms or whatever. I don't know what to tell you after that. You know, it's like if he doesn't have a fever and he doesn't have this and he doesn't have that, and the test is saying he's positive, then bring a papaya in and say, here, test this too.
Okay,
you know what I mean? Because I think that test would say a papaya is so positive, you think my son's positive.
I know, a papaya and some donkey or something.
Yeah, right.
So you wouldn't just say, look, we're not going to take the test because you don't...
No, because they're going to kick the surgery out. You're going to lose the surgery, and it's just a stupid test. You know, there was, early on, there was a concern, and they did have some tests that had COVID in it, and they were actually giving it to people.
Yeah, right. So, that was like in March or April, right?
Yeah, it was early on, and I think that got nipped in the butt. And I haven't heard anything more about that. So I don't think that's a concern anymore. It's terrible if you got, you know, it's too bad you couldn't have waited until after this was all over, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, right.
So just take it and see what happens, and then go from there, you know, and pray to God that it says negative, you know.
Yeah, I guess, finding a whole nother surgeon would take a long time. Maybe it's just go ahead and do it.
Crazy, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah. Okay, next. Monel Francis, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
This is Lynn. I've got several things that I want to comment on. I was caller number 59 at the court hearing this last week.
Okay.
And I found it very interesting. I hear the same shysters over and over again. One question. Well, they are. They're shysters.
Oh, no doubt. That's being kind. But go ahead.
Oh, no, that's his last law dictionary.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway. That's the technical term, huh?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Okay, several different things. As far as masks are concerned, I have, in the last couple of weeks, I've been in three places where it was required to wear a mask. And one was at a store where I went to pay a bill, and I've forgotten the other place. But anyway, I don't wear a mask. Never have. I don't own one. I will not wear one because it's bad for my health.
I'm right there with you. I'm always fighting with them all the time.
But what I have a paper, and what it says basically, and I don't bring the paper even with me, but I just say, I walk and they say, you have to have a mask. And I say, no, I'm exempt. I have health issues, and you can't ask me what they are because of HIPAA and the ADA laws. And I just stand there. Oh, just a minute, please. And they run them back, and they come out, and they say, you could go in now. I just did this at the vet's office last week.
Well, they made me go through the drive-through in the bank, and I couldn't really argue with them because they gave me an alternative. I said, "So you're not going to give me service because
of my
disability."
Well, that's a little bit different. But there's no alternative if you want to be with the animal. Anyway,
right.
And there were three of us. The first person went in was the owner. The second person that went in was with the cat was my daughter, and she doesn't wear a mask either. And my landlady came back out because I was still getting out of the car. And I said, what's up? She said, I can't go in. I don't have a mask. I said, we'll see about that. So I went in and I did my shtick. And she says, just a minute. She went in the back and asked the vet, and he let me go in. So my daughter went out and said, you can come in now. So we were all three in there with the cat. And nobody was uncomfortable. Everything was fine. It was a good vet. So what I'm saying is you have to stand up to them. And the time I went in to pay a bill, they said, you have to wear a mask. I said, you know, I've been coming here for 4.5 years to pay this bill. Well, they also don't take cash at this place. And so I said, I've been coming here for 4.5 years to pay this bill, and I always pay in cash, and I don't wear a mask because I don't need one. I said, you prove to me that COVID is contagious, all right, and I'll consider it. Well, they can't do that. And I would like to tell everybody, and if they don't know about it, there is a very, very good video you could watch. It's on freedomplatform.tv/movie. So freedomplatform.tv/movie. It will take you to Brian Rose, who runs Freedom, Platform. And on there is a very good movie with an interview with Judy Bykovitz. And she will tell you anything you need to know about this because that was her life work.
Right.
And she's
right.
very familiar with Dr. Fauci. And I believe on there's a short version and a long version. I believe on the long version, she includes in there the corruption of Dr. Fauci. And I think the entire world should know about it. He's a con man. He's a shyster. He's a crook. He's not a truth teller. And he should be exposed.
Yeah.
He and everybody else. And Dr. Birx is not much better, except she does tell the truth. She says people don't necessarily die of COVID-19. They die with it.
Right.
In other words, they have kidney failure, heart failure, this
right.
failure, that failure. And they just might, maybe, if they tested them, maybe might have had COVID-19 also.
Right.
So they're cooking us on every angle. They're just lying like rugs, which
Absolutely.
Is what they do best. And I disagree with the advice of that lady about asking about the test. Now, this may not work. However, they want to do the surgery because they make big money on it. They do not make big money arguing with you about whether or not you could go in the hospital. And if you, they won't allow you in the hospital because you might have COVID-19 or you won't take the test, I would guess that they would rather do the surgery. They don't make much money on doing the COVID-19 test. And they all know it's phony by now. I saw something in, last week by Dr. Shahid Buttar, and he said 60% of the world now knows that it's a fraud. The entire thing is a fraud.
Well, I want to tell you, the worst ones are the doctors.
Some of them are, but they all know.
They're running around with their mask on and washing their hands, and you come in without a mask, and they're like jumping under the desk on you. And these are doctors. You know, I don't.
Well,
I don't,
there are some doctors that have been telling the truth. And Dr. Shahid Buttar runs a huge clinic.
Yeah,
and he'll tell you all about
that.
Buttar
is very, very good. Yes, he is.
Dr.
Shiva is good too. Dr. Shiva is another one that tells the truth about.
Okay, I'm not familiar, but there's a doctor in New York. I forgot his name. It's something Kyle something. Why I remember the Kyle, I don't know. But he's in the one of the big hospitals in New York, and he got on, and this is all over YouTube. You could probably find him. And he says wearing a mask is, you know, it's like superficial. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. But he said the whole incidence of this COVID-19 and trying to put ventilators on people is the entirely wrong treatment. If they do have COVID-19.
Absolutely. You're going to make everything
worse. And now that is coming out more and more. And there are other doctors that are saying more patients probably with the ventilator and have died of COVID. And as you... why am I hearing a ping pong?
I don't know. Somebody's got their Skype on. It's beeping.
Oh, okay. Anyway, there's all sorts of stuff out there. I happen to... have the ability to watch an awful lot of these things on YouTube at this present time, and I have been watching them, and I'm rather disgusted by the lies that they've been telling us. I have a background in medicine. My daughter says, don't tell anybody you're a naturopath. Well, I will say it on here. I am a naturopath. I'm a certified natural health professional, and I have a long background because I have been studying vaccines since 1973.
Right.
And my advice to everyone, all my clients and everybody that I know, every chance I get, I tell them, do not get a vaccine. None of them have been proven effective. Not one, ever.
Yeah,
you're just getting useless garbage put into your body that your body and your liver has to, you know, fend off, and it can make you sick. So just don't get it. I had one vaccine for flu when I was 14 years old, which is many, 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 many years ago. My mother insisted on it. I had not been sick. I wasn't sick. I got sick, and I spent 3 weeks in bed. And that was back when they didn't have so many toxins in the vaccine.
Right, right.
And I informed my mother, I will never have another one again. Don't even ask.
Right.
Because I was so sick. I thought I was going to die.
Look at people get the flu
and
vaccine,
worse now.
And they get the flu.
There's a list of about, I don't know, 9 to 14 things that they put in vaccines as adjuvants. You don't need those adjuvants, but they like to do it just so that your body will react. You know what? Why would you want your body to react? If it's perfectly healthy now, why do you want to get sick and have your body react?
Well, it's their sick
really
medicine.
Ridiculous. Recently, my son, I just want to put in an anecdote. Recently, my son thought he had COVID-19, so he went to the hospital, had a test. And it turns out he didn't. He had food poisoning, but he had all the same symptoms
right.
of COVID-19. Fortunately, he did have a test done, fortunately, they told the truth. I had told them on the phone. I said, you don't have COVID-19. Oh, but I could.
What did you say you studied? What path were you? What kind of...
I'm a naturopath. I'm a naturopath. I do use things that are natural. Get great results with it.
Yeah,
a lot better than most
people
go to the doctor.
Same,
in fact, a lot of people go to the doctor and then they come to me.
Yeah.
You know, because they haven't had any success with the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I use all natural stuff. You know, light and sleep and color and vitamins, minerals, herbs, essential oils. You know, anything that's natural is really not intrusive to the body, but it boosts the immune system and it boosts the body's health. I don't use things that are negative.
There,
for example, essential oils raise your body's vibrational frequency, which will eventually bring you back to good health, because when your vibrational frequency, we are vibrational beings. When your vibrational frequency is high, you won't get sick. On the other hand, drugs, all drugs, any drug, name it, it's a drug. It lowers your body's vibrational frequency, and your body actually has to work harder to get over whatever it is you have.
Right.
So I advise people to get out there and start reading. There's tons and tons of good books and literature, and there are webinars all over the place now. You can learn how to make your body healthy and how to keep it healthy. And it's not by running to the doctor and spending all your money on the doctor. Buy books, read, study. Buy videos, watch. Pay attention, take notes, ask questions. There are lots of people out there that will be happy to answer questions.
Yeah.
And you can wind up with a healthy body. I know. I started out in life as a very sickly child. Had sore throats and you know, was miserable most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And things turned around when I got older and started doing things differently. And
right.
The other thing that was wonderful was I quit sugar. And I don't eat sugar.
That's a big one. That's a big one. People don't
that
realize
is a big
how
one.
Big
it was
that.
Very difficult.
It's a very
I was a sugar
big
junkie.
One.
Yeah, I was a
yep.
sugar junkie as a child. And I've got the lack, the problem, tooth problem.
Sugar's a drug. People don't realize it.
Yes, and it's 8 times more addictive than cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very hard to get off, but I did. If I can get off it, anybody can. But it takes time. It takes work. And let me see. There are a couple of other things. During the so-called hearing that I was listening to, I was wondering if anybody had asked for the judge's oath.
Yeah, I think John did.
Okay.
Did you also ask...
for their Foreign Agent Registration Act.
No, I don't think we did that.
Because they're supposed to register as foreign agents if they are bar lawyers. And I'm assuming that being on the federal court system, they are bar lawyers.
There's no doubt she's a bar lawyer, but I don't...
Okay, well, if she doesn't have a foreign agent registration, she is in violation. I think she could actually be kicked out of the country. But I don't know all the ramifications of it. All I know is she must have that Foreign Agents Act registration.
So we can
so
call
you
her
might
up
check
and tell
on
her,
that if you
tell,
haven't checked
call her up and tell her to start packing her bags.
Well, you can check it out through a FOIA.
Yeah.
And do you just ask them for a certified copy of her foreign agents registration? And if they don't have it, would they please send that back to you on their letterhead?
Right.
And signed. And they will.
I wonder how many of them actually have that.
If you can find one, let me know.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
That's
same thing with oats. Very few of them have proper oats.
Right.
Very, very few. They're foreign agents. They're not here for our good. Okay, what else do I have? Okay. When she was talking about John being part of a corporation or something like that, no. It's a private society. And I would emphasize the word private. Because really, technically, she can't deal with the private side. I was kind of surprised that you even took the case to that court. I think it has to go to a private court. It has to go to an American national court, if you will. Their courts are not our courts. And they've said this for years, these are private courts. Well, that's great. So if they can have private courts for their bar lawyers, we should be able to have private courts for our people. And, let me see if there's anything else I wanted to say. Oh, the people whose daughter is being held in a hospital jail.
Yeah.
They probably could go to court and challenge them for theft of private property. and say that their property was taken from and is being held, you know, and give the address of the hospital. You don't have to name it. Just that's the address. You know where the private property is being held. No, it's not a daughter. It's private property. Because that's what our children are until they come of age. They are our private property. And Carl Lentz used to do that in
court.
There
you go. I was trying to think his name when you were talking. Because he's the one that says, you have my property. He was very simple the way he wrote.
Yep. It is very simple.
Carl Lentz.
And they hate it. They absolutely hate it. But I was on the phone call when one couple had just got their baby back. And the father had put in all kinds of stuff and said, I don't want my child vaccinated, et cetera, et cetera. They vaccinated their child, that child. And boy, do they have a lawsuit. I mean, they toxified their private property. You know, and it's private property. And you have a right to private property. So, I'd like to see if there's anything else I have on here.
Is Carl Lentz still around? I haven't heard him in years, but...
I haven't heard him for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's still around, but I do know I heard him a lot of times on a talk show thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said a lot of very good things. You had to check everything. But, he said a lot of very, very intelligent things. And, none of us knows everything. If we all got together and shared our knowledge, probably would be, brilliant. Mm-hmm. But that's only something the lawyers do.
Right.
Okay. I think that's all.
Okay. Well, that was good. A lot of good points.
But I agree very much with I've only been on a few of these calls by invitation of a friend who I believe is a member, and I agree with what you say, so I will be looking into this more, and I definitely want the book. I can't get it now, but within the next month or so, I will. I guess I just sent in the notice that I want to order the book.
Yeah, there's an order form in on the site you can find.
All right, which site?
On nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
And,
that's what I thought.
You'll see the sheriff's campaign book. Okay.
Well, I thank you very, very much for what you're doing. I have been in this fight since 1966,
wow.
And I won't stop because I am so disgusted with the way they've defrauded me and stolen my rights and. You know, and they know what they're doing, and I don't always have the right answers. I don't think that well on my feet. I've got one daughter that does. She can think through anything in court. She thinks better than the judge does. But they shoot her down anyway. I mean, women, I think women have a much more difficult time, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that someday we will have rule-free courts.
Well, I think
there will be common law juries, and people will be educated enough to know that you go by your gut feeling. When you realize that the person that's being accused is telling the truth. Okay, our forefathers said, better that 9 criminals go free, this is a paraphrase, than that one person be unjustly...
Right. And I agree with that.
I think we need to, and as far as education is concerned, throw the government out of the educational system, close all the schools, reopen them again under the people, and teach things like law and health. Real health, not drug health. Real health, how to stay healthy and, how to overcome your maladies. And I believe that we have been fearfully and wonderfully created such that we are able to overcome whatever it is, whatever happens and rises in the body can be reversed. You just have to find out how. And there's always somebody out there that knows. Keep looking till you find it.
Right.
And with that, I yield, and I thank you very much again.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Kelly from Ohio. What's going on in Ohio?
Hello. Well, I've got a little bit of a problem with, I had a civil CPS case, filed a joinder, and the administrative county court is ignoring the decision and order and are, in fact, continuing to retaliate against me. They put a third assistant prosecutor on the case. There was a second prosecutor on the case this February who asked for the case to be closed. They did not close the case. And then we had another hearing in August of this year. I I didn't go to it. I attempted to go to it, but I wouldn't wear a mask, so they wouldn't let me in.
This is a CPS case? You said CPS?
Yes, and the judge and the prosecutor are trying to get my mental health records where I put myself in counseling as a proactive measure to support myself during the kids' separation. This was way back in 2019. They cannot come back in after an assistant prosecutor wanted to close the case in February. The only reason it remained open was so that I could fill out an affidavit and present my evidence, because my attorneys that I fired later did not represent me. They actually misrepresented me. And so basically, they're trying to rehash or dig up a bone that does not exist. And they, you know, once they said they had no concerns in February, the prosecution cannot go back through and try to dig up something else in the case. What they're trying to do is they something about the mental health or something. They want to see if I'm mentally stable or something like that.
Yeah,
but the thing was,
when they said
they had no concerns, and they have no concerns, they can't go back and change their mind and try to dig up stuff from the past. That's like double jeopardy in a criminal trial, isn't it?
Well, I would imagine, but, you know, they do what they want to do. That's the problem.
Sounds
like the Judge Flynn case. They told them to close it, it's still open. You know, I mean, they do it up at that level. What makes you think they're not going to do it to you, you know?
Right. And so they don't know, they do not know, though, that CPS obtained their investigation in a private home due to threats and coercion and intimidation. And they don't understand that the deputy actually was only used to falsely use Juvenile Rule 6, removal by law enforcement, which he basically was just giving CPS the okay to take the children. He left. He wasn't here during the first part of the investigation. He only came for a brief few minutes toward the end, and he left. He didn't even see or talk to my kids. So there's a lot of things the court doesn't know, and because my attorneys failed to state anything, and I do have documentation to show the deputy lied in his reports, I wasn't given any documentation before the shelter hearing, and I was not told why my kids were removed. Anyway, we are at threat here. I don't feel safe in my home, and I am fed up. I need to talk to John. I talked to Jim. I was told to talk to John on the Monday night call. I'm calling for help. We are living in fear, and this is bullshit. I've had enough. I need to know what to do. Can I file a mandamus to the appeals court or something? I don't know. I heard the appeals court don't really do anything either. So, maybe talk to the sheriff's department and tell them, you know, show them the report, show them where the deputy's lying, saying that I went to the hospital. I have the run sheet showing that I didn't go to the hospital. That's the only thing document-wise that I can show that the deputy was lying. But my mother was here also and witnessed the investigation and the deputy's brief appearance and departure.
Right. Do you know your sheriff? I mean, how do you feel about your sheriff? Is he a good guy?
They don't have an internal affairs department. I was told by one of the detectives that I could talk to him, but they would not allow me to go in and sit down and talk with the sheriff. They wouldn't even put him on the phone. And I know there's somebody else running for sheriff, so I'm wondering if there's some way that maybe the sheriff, he's rerunning for election again. So I'm thinking maybe he might talk to me that way now that, you know, they've got an election coming up or something.
Yeah, if he's running for election, he should talk to you. There's no way that you should not be able to get, you should be able to demand to see your sheriff. You're his constituent. You leave me alone.
I know that. Yeah, I realize that. I'm going to chain myself to this
poll here until my sheriff comes out. You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. He's an elected official, and they won't let you see him. What is he, the Wizard of Oz?
I found out from the caseworker tonight. She emailed me, and now I don't know whether she's lying or not, but she basically said that I have a video from her, too, the day that we were supposed to appear in court in August of this year. Mind you, this was after the decision and order by the grand jury, okay, the joinder. I was surprised by the guardian ad litem, who has never spoke to me, and the case manager just appeared at my house an hour before this August hearing. But I have her on videotape stating that she had no concerns and she saw no reason for this case to remain open. I just found out tonight through email that she's admitting that it was the prosecutor on the new prosecutor on the case and the judge, the court, who is wanting my mental health records. Well, I also had a mental health evaluation done, and the attorney evidently didn't turn that in. But then again, there was no probable cause. I feel violated. I did not have to put any of this information out there, you know, because they denied me due process from day one.
Sounds like they need to get sued, that the prosecutor.
Of course. Of course. But my problem is right now, huh?
What do they think they're doing going after your mental health records for no reason?
Well, I don't know. No reason. It's retaliation. I think they're trying to look for something.
That's what it is. That's right.
To try to prove me unfit or something, which, like I said, I don't know.
You have your children now?
Yes, they were returned to me during the disposition hearing, but the attorney and the CPS worker coerced me into a deal before going into that hearing. Basically, the lawyer said, take the deal or I'm done. They agreed to let the kids come home under my temporary custody, and that CPS would remain and have supervision, but you know, they came maybe, what, twice? Just a, you know, home visit twice.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just really just, they're harassing us. They're harassing us and they're causing us harm. They're inflicting fear. I have a son that has disabilities. I have another child that needs my attention. I'm separated right now. My husband abandoned us. This was several months ago. He abandoned us, which he's done this before. Okay, I'm disabled and I don't have trust. I don't have any trust in bar attorneys, and I could really use some help trying to figure out how to navigate some of this other stuff here. I don't have time for the CPS case. You know, the harassment, I've got enough to deal with. My son has disabilities, and since they placed my kids back in public school, my son lost his scholarship services that I had provided for him that helps me to pay for well, it's a scholarship. It helps pay for services he needs, like help with writing, help with his math, things like that. It has to do with the education stuff, the education law. And so he lost all that, and he failed his classes. And now, you know, they've just messed up everything. But I need to figure out what I can do as far as, I mean, I know a lot more of my rights, obviously, than I did before, but I need to find out how that I get these people to stop what they're doing. I'm working on an affidavit. It's extremely long. I'm not sure what all goes in an affidavit, but they need to be aware of what happened with the CPS and how this investigation went. The CPS worker was saying that the diagnoses that my son has, she's claiming they're unfounded, but I have the documents to prove otherwise. And they were trying to dig up something because they had nothing. Okay, they had nothing on me. They had nothing, but they were, you know, obviously they were trying to create something. And they got my son's medical records, which I did not consent to. I didn't consent to any of this.
Well, maybe we can set up a time where you can have an interview with John, because I don't really know, you know, where.
Right. Right. And like I said, myself, you know, I mean, we're. Yeah, and I'm waiting for the day. I don't know if it's post-traumatic stress or what, but anytime, like my mother, I'm like, if you ever come over, I said, knock, or call me before you come. Anybody knocks on this door, it freaks me out. I don't feel safe in my house. The sheriff came into my house without knocking. He didn't identify himself, said he could do any damn thing in this house he wanted. That's the only communication we had between each other. I said, how did you get in? You didn't even knock. He said, I can do any damn thing in this house I want. He was a really young guy. I don't feel safe here, and I need to know what to do. This can't wait.
What state are you in?
I'm in Ohio, and I can't find anybody here to help. I've looked for other NLA members, you know, other people that might, you know, maybe have some kind of, you know, knowledge about the documents and things.
Right,
I'm
or,
still
any, or any other parent groups or anything like that. I don't know.
Right, there's nothing. I can't find anything.
Well, actually, I might know somebody in Ohio that's part of a group like that. Let me see what I can find out. Because it's always better if you band together with people than do it on your own. See, they feel very comfortable when you're alone like that, especially if they know you don't have a husband in the house, too. They'll take advantage of you, you know?
There's a lady named Kathleen. She's in a couple counties over, I think. But she's like, just, you know, do your affidavit or whatever. And I'm like, well, you know, it seems like nobody ever gets back with you if you have a question, and that's basically all there is. There's really no support group. You're still pretty much on your own. And the last I heard, they were hunting her down, and she was something about somebody was supposedly shooting bullets or something. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where she's at. I don't know. I just know she was trying to help other people by telling them to submit an affidavit and that they were going to have some kind of a class action or something. I don't know. But nobody seems to stay in touch. There's not a whole lot of advocates here in Ohio. There's not a lot of people, you know. I know there's who is that? She used to be a bar attorney. She basically rescinded her licensure or something.
Right.
She's in another group too. Wanting me to basically renounce my birth certificate and all this other stuff. But I'm like, you know, I don't have time to learn that stuff right now. Right now we're being threatened. I need to find a way to protect myself.
That's not going to work anyway. You're renouncing your birth certificate and all that. That's magic voodoo stuff.
Right.
They're not going to listen to that. And you're going to go through all that trouble, and it's going to end up costing you more trouble in the end.
Sure.
And they're going to turn around and they're going to say, now we can ship her out of here because she's not even an American citizen anymore. And your second state's going to be way worse than what your first state was. You know?
Right.
So don't do any of that garbage. You know?
Right. And the thing is, this is a civil thing. They treated me worse than a criminal. It's oppressive.
Well,
I did nothing. They had nothing on me. Absolutely nothing.
That's because they're afraid to piss the criminals off.
Definitely.
Yes, exactly. I'm telling you. You know, people that get abused from CPS, usually, you know, they go after the meeker people. When they come to the door and you got some guy, big guy, standing there screaming and jumping up and down, they want to get out of there because they don't want to get hurt. And they don't want that. They don't like that case. You know what I mean? It's human nature, I think, you know.
Well,
so I don't know. I'll talk to John. You said you talked to Jim. Jim knows who you are in your case and all that.
Yes, Jim knows me. Yes.
All right, so I'll talk to Jim, Kelly, and see where you're at with it, and see if we can figure out what kind of paper is better to file. I mean, you got to get yourself out of there somehow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It says you got to make an exit. You know, exit stage left. And even if it is the path of least resistance, you might have to create something that's going to convince them to let you out. Like, you got to make it more uncomfortable for them. They need to answer for this.
I don't know how much more uncomfortable they can get. They received the decision and order by the grand jury, and once I started sending those documents, like the show cause and things like that, they started getting really nasty. So.
Yeah, well.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I've thought about contacting them.
They have to be personally responsible. When it hits their pocketbook, then that's when they pay attention, you know. So,
right.
I mean, I if you can get it out of that court and move it up to a higher court or something, I don't know. But we won't talk about that right now because I'm just...
Right, like a writ of mandamus, but I don't know how. If I knew how, I would...
All right.
I'm still learning.
So I'll talk to Jim and John and see if there's something, some kind of a better form that you can fill out, and maybe to move the thing out of that court, or maybe where you can actually put their feet to the fire, make them answer. You know, you got to get off.
Right.
You got to get off the defensive. You got to get on the offensive. You know, so to speak. And it has to cost them. You know what I mean? It has to cost them some skin. You know, they don't. Right. The reason they don't care is because there's no repercussions for them. You know.
Well, the CPS worker who interviewed my kids, there was two of them. One kept me and my mother busy in the kitchen, and we weren't allowed to go in to be with my kids in the bedroom. The second CPS worker who was here the same day with the other worker interviewed my kids and didn't appear in court, and basically illegally took my son's cell phone and searched and seized that. And she wasn't in court to testify. She didn't submit her own report. So the first worker had no firsthand knowledge about my kids, and she's the one who submitted the report. So, I'm wondering why the other worker didn't show up for court. and nobody got to testify. So I have reason to believe the attorney stipulated without my consent. I wasn't allowed to go to the pretrial conference. He said it was for attorneys only. So I have reason to believe he just was too lazy to do his job. And, so because we didn't get to testify. The more I look into this, the more I learn the laws and the procedures, I'm looking at it. I'm thinking he stipulated without my consent, without my knowledge. So it was dependency. It was the very vague dependency. It doesn't describe exactly what it is. And here's the thing. Dependency is supposed to be not at the fault of the parent. So why are they trying to prove me unfit by trying to find out about my medical records, which, that doesn't make sense.
No. But, they do what they do. They don't have to make sense. But
all right. Anyway. Well, I appreciate your help. I do.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. I'll talk to Jim, and then maybe get John and see if there's something better you can fill out. Okay?
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. We got Dan from Carolinas. Go ahead. You're open, Dan, if you're there. Hello. I don't hear anything. Dan from Carolinas. I think I opened you. Yeah, I did. Your mic's open. Hello, Dan. Are you there? Or is it me? Did I lose my headphones? I don't hear anything.
Can you hear me, Gerard?
I hear you. Now I hear you. Boy, it was quiet like nothing. I don't hear Dan.
I don't hear Dan either.
Yeah, well, maybe something's wrong there. And he's the last guy in the queue, too.
So,
like,
time to close?
I guess. If nobody else is going to get in and Dan can't get his mic going, so that's going to close us early today, which doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it makes up for some of the long nights.
Yeah. All right. Well, if that's it, then I'm gonna thank everybody for being here and come back next week, same time. And we certainly have a lot of work to do and a lot of issues, so we can see that. Anyway, God bless everybody, and we'll see you here same time, same bat station. Thank you.
We do have some questions, Gerard, if you want some.
Is that Jan?
It is. It is. I finally got back.
I thought I heard Brent momentarily there in the middle of things. Huh?
Yep.
I did?
I don't know if Brent's here.
I heard him, but...
He's here.
I wonder if I should let Brent say a couple words. It's only it's 20 after. He could do 10, 15 minutes.
Sure.
Yeah. Or thereabouts. Brent, if you're there and you wanna say something, we have time for you. Everything else got cleaned up while you were not here. Where is he? I don't see
him. He's muted.
Unmute your mic, Brent.
No, I can't unmute him.
I don't see him. Hang on. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm unmuted.
There you go. Yes, you are.
Is okay. Well, there's so many things to talk about.
Well, pick one or two and have at it.
Well, okay, I'll pick one. Apparently, there's a Supreme Court opening opened up, and it sure would be refreshing to yours truly if the President of the United States would pick some unknown lawyer that's been beating his brains out in court for clients for the last 20, 30, 40 years. Who nobody ever heard of, who didn't go to an Ivy League school, but had actually practiced law, criminal defense law. That'd be refreshing if he would pull him up and say, well, I've got old Joe Blow here from Podunk, Nebraska, and I want him to be on the Supreme Court and see what they do. But we've fallen into a trap in America of thinking and presidents thinking only, and it's probably true, if they didn't offer somebody from an Ivy League school, people wouldn't accept them. But do you really think, in your heart of hearts, that go into Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Princeton, University of Minnesota or Michigan or one of those other highfalutin schools really makes a lawyer any better to sit as a Supreme Court justice. And now, that's not to say that going to those places make you any worse necessarily, but not necessarily make you any better. You know, to practice law, you've either got to jump through or over a high bar to get in law school, or you got to jump over a high bar to get out. Usually it's one of the two. There's always a bar. Now, if you go to one of those Ivy League schools like Harvard, you got to jump over a high bar to get in. If you can clear the high bar to get in, you'll get out. That's it. You'll get out and everybody will think you're smart. Well, people that do really well in school and make straight A's and go off to college and make straight A's and go off to law school and make straight A's, what those are people that have learned to repeat back to the instructor what the instructor told them. That's all they are. It doesn't mean that they can do anything else. The fellow that wrote the four volumes of Blackstone, was William Blackstone. And William Blackstone, after he delivered those lectures, and then after those lectures were reduced to writing, and after they became famous, and after they sold far more copies in the American colonies than they did in England, after all that, he was well known. They appointed him, the king appointed him to be a judge on the bench in England. And everybody since has said that William Blackstone was one of the worst judges England ever had. How come? Well, the reason they said that, because the upper appellate courts constantly overturning him. Well, from my perspective, that's a good judge. And in his particular case, there's no question, his rulings were following the law, and the appellate judges probably didn't know the law. That's probably what was going on in that case. And he ruled the way the law required him to rule. According to our common law, there are two standards for judges. Two. And these are the only two standards to which anyone should give any emphasis when deciding whether or not a fellow ought to be a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States or any other judgeship. Well, those two standards are ancient. They're simple. Magna Carta lists them pretty clearly. Two requirements. Number one, to be a judge, you must know the law. Now, of course, that doesn't mean you know about the law. No, that means you know the law. You could know about your wife, but that doesn't mean the woman you're going to marry. That doesn't mean you know her. You'll get to know her behind closed doors, and she'll get to know you. For a judge to know the law means that he has to do what a newly married couple do. They interact behind closed doors. And if a man hasn't interacted with the law by himself, that means nobody else. Nobody else telling him what to do, how to think. Nobody else saying, spit this back to me the way I gave it to you. If he hasn't taken time to do that, he doesn't know the law. Again, distinguishing between knowing about the law and knowing the law. And then second, not only, as Magna Carta put it, as an observation, not only does he need to know the law, he needs to also mean to observe it well. mean to observe it well. Now, those are simple. The law has to be your personal possession, not just something you know about. And second, you got to be committed to it. Now, if you don't get to know the woman behind closed doors and vice versa, unless you're willing to make a public commitment. Public. Marriage, by analogy, you see, marriage is a public commitment. It's not a commitment you make in secret unless you live in a tyrannous situation where you're not allowed to marry somebody, then you might do that. But the very fundamental of marriage is it's public. You tell the whole world about it. You don't hide it. Well, so it is also with one who would be a judge. He must make public his commitment to the law. In fact, lawyers in our common law country traditionally have been called sergeants at law. That's an old word. What does it mean? Well, it's an old French word. It means servant. Sergeant means servant. And the sergeants at law were the servants at, A-T, law. And that preposition indicated a close, close relationship. It means that a man is married to the law. It means that the law is the preoccupation of his mind to which, like a rubber band, it always goes back to. Now, is that to be just the preoccupation of lawyers? Listen, if that's just to be the preoccupation of lawyers, those two requirements, we're doomed. Why? Because there's not enough of them, number one. You say, oh, we got more than any country in the world per capita. Still not enough. What we need is a critical mass of men to whom the law is the preoccupation of their mind. Jesus Christ put it this way. My food, my meat, is to do the will of him that sent me. My food is to do the will of him that sent me. What's he saying? Well, he's saying, of course, we know the will of the sovereign is law in any country. Whoever that country deems to be sovereign, the will of that sovereign is law. Well, the true law is the will of the maker of all things, the skies and the land and all that in them is, seen and unseen. Some call him the creator. If your preoccupation as an American is not to do the will of the maker of all things, your life's going to suffer accordingly. There isn't any other duty among men. None. That's it. And he has revealed his will in two volumes. Our Declaration of 76 tells us the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, the laws of nature, unwritten, lex non scripta, as Blackstone puts it, and the laws of nature's God, as Blackstone tells us, that phrase means the Bible, lex scripta, written. And Blackstone says at the beginning of those four volumes, those commentaries on the laws of England, he said it behooves every young man, it behooves every young man to know the first principles of true law. Why? Because without it, he will be in violation. He will destroy his own relationships. He'll destroy relationships not only with other men, but with God himself. He'll make his own life miserable. He'll hurt people. He'll destroy productivity. It isn't that you have to be what the lawyer is. No, they get off in the minutiae that doesn't matter, in fact, wastes time. But if you do not have a passion to know true law in its fundamentals, then really that's all there is, and that's all you can preoccupy yourself with. You just get better and better and better at applying those fundamentals. And that's what a good lawyer ought to do. He ought to never leave the fundamentals, just get better and better and better at applying those fundamentals to a different set of circumstances and different set of facts. So when you consider a Supreme Court justice or any other judge, again, to sum up, there are two fundamental requirements: to know the law, not know about it, not be able to recite a bunch of it back to some professor at a law school someplace and make straight A's and get on the law review and get a good job and become an academic and get appointed to the bench. We don't want that. No, we want somebody that knows the law. And the only way you can know it is to seriously and constantly interact with it. But you cannot interact with what you have not identified. And if you can't identify those first principles, you'll never know the law. And then also, second, there must be a commitment, a meaning to do it well, a determination, a focus to observe that law that you know. There are a lot of people know a whole lot about the Bible. It's an academic affair for them. I've read in commentaries, can't remember this fellow's name, it was the Anchor Bible Commentary. Man, was that guy smart. He didn't believe any of it. Knew more about it than hardly anybody else. Didn't believe a bit of it. That won't do you any good. Won't do anybody else any good either. You must have the will, the passion, the determination to do it. Well, this is Brent, Alan Winters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, and you can find my books and recordings and 30 hours on Magna Carta audio. You can find those at CommonLawyer.com and how to obtain a copy. We just got out a 4-volume set of the winterized version of the Bible. A Common Lawyer translates and annotates from the original tongues, the Hebrew, the Aramaic, and the Greek, 15,000 footnotes, 123 appendices, detailed headnotes, the beginning of each of the Bible's books. It's out there now. You can get it in those four hard copy volumes, those four printed volumes, or you can get it also digital by a link now, and you can go to commonlawyer.com and see how to do that. But here's what's been moving a lot. I'm not sure why, can't always describe it, but the comparative law text, Excellence of the Common Law, it's in popular demand, and it's been out for about 12 years, but just within the last few months, I don't know why, but people want it, and they want that study guide that goes with it. Now, I haven't done any study guides for any of my books, but now there are about three or four of them have study guides, and I've discovered people want those. Other people have done them for me. I don't take credit, but what they did was they took the information out of the book and did it kind of like Mr. Saxon did with Saxon Math, that popular arithmetic curriculum for homeschoolers. But I see the advantage of it. Well, you can find all those at commonlawyer.com, and I'm going to take a breather and give it back to Gerard. Thank you, Gerard, for giving me a little time.
I would like to ask a couple of questions of you, Brent.
I'm here. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay. I've got to roll back up to where it is. Are you familiar with the Rules Enabling Act of 1934?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things, just so that people understand, that set down, that was the Congress giving the judiciary the power to write the rules for the court. Correct?
Yes, the Congress did that.
And we as citizens, as people, sovereign people here in the United States, never gave them that power in the Constitution.
No, that there's There's a, well, let me put it this way. Because our government is a common law government, there are three powers, of course, in government, in all governments, and in our government, those three powers are separated. That means each branch of government, as it were, grows as an independent branch out of the trunk of the tree called the Constitution. And the Constitution is rooted deep in the common law. But each one of those branches, like a branch on a tree, none of them depend upon each other. They depend only upon the trunk of the tree. It's just like the parable of Jesus Christ, I believe John, the Gospel of John, where he says, I am the vine, ye are the branches. Well, the vine's that big stump that grows in the stumpy-looking thing that grows out in the vineyard, and off of it, these real little, about as big as your, round as your finger, these vines go up along these wires. You've watched, you've been to California, you see those migrant workers out there taking care of all that stuff. Well, each one of those vines is independent of any other vine. It draws its life only by its own attachment to the vine, the stump. Same thing is true, of course, with a limb on a tree. And because we have separation of powers, I'm getting to your point here, Terry, because we have separation of powers, Congress has no business officially dictating to the courts. Not at all. Now, they can tell the courts what they want. They can tell the courts what they want. That doesn't mean the courts have to do what they want. And the courts don't, often. And vice versa. The Supreme Court of the United States can make their ruling, their decision. That doesn't mean that the President of the United States is bound by any law to enforce it, or that the Congress is bound to follow it. This is missed. Now, people in America think that the Supreme Court of the United States is the final word on any particular matter they rule on. That is not true. I say that with full confidence. Full confidence. There's no place our Constitution says that. It never was the truth before about 1910. In the year 1910, a Quaker who was also a communist — Quakers sometimes get into weird stuff because they never nail anything down — but he was a communist. His name was Charles Beard, B-E-A-R-D. And he wrote a little book. It wasn't very long. You can get it yet today. Charles Beard on the Supreme Court or something, I forget. But it's Charles Beard. He was a communist. He wrote a book wherein he argued that the Supreme Court of the United States, whatever they say, is the final word on any matter. Trumping, of course, then, he says, the President and the Congress. Well, the Supreme Court of the United States even quoted that book. I mean, I think that those folk up there, some of them, really believe that stuff. I asked a Supreme Court justice from a state court, Chief Justice, one time, on the radio, back when we used to have radio, now it's everything's internet, if that were true, and I thought that he would agree with me, because I kind of knew what I thought his point of view was. Oh, he got kind of snippy about it, and he asked me what I thought. Well, you know the answer to that. And I said, well, even if I did, people don't want to listen to me. You're the Supreme Court Justice. That's why we got you on. They want to know what you'll say. And he said, well, of course the Supreme Court, the word of the Supreme Court is sovereign over everything else. That is not true. Utterly untrue. Matter of fact, at that very moment, he was fighting with the Supreme Court of the United States over whether or not he could pay with his own money and put the a memorial to the Ten Commandments in the rotunda of the Supreme Court building of his state with his own money as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of his state. So that surprised me. I didn't think he would say what he said. I've had other people, other prominent lawyers, tell me the same thing. They've been drinking the Kool-Aid. It ain't true. Andy Jackson made the point. Andy Jackson, President Andy Jackson, when he vetoed the renewal of the charter of the National Bank. Oh, as you can imagine, he brought the wrath of the people that really had the power down on his noggin. Well, he made that decision, and he wrote his reasons, and he said, when I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, I did not take an oath to support and defend the Constitution as somebody else understands it, including, by the way, the Supreme Court of the United States. No, he said, I took an oath to support and defend it as I understand it. Now, why would anybody even have to say something like that? I mean, is it possible for me to take an oath before God and say, I swear I will support the Constitution of the United States as this political hack over here says it ought to be understood? Well, that's stupid. Nobody in their right mind would do that, although I think there are people that probably do those kind of things. Listen, you're going to swear an oath, you better recognize, that's the whole point of the solemnity of it, recognize that you're going to answer to God himself, whether or not you fulfilled your duty that you swore to, and whether or not it was even the proper thing to swear to. And you ain't going to be able to say, well, I did it according to how they said I was supposed to do it. No, no, no. That won't work. That's not the mark of a free man. A free man discerns his own decisions. He gathers knowledge. He listens to other people. He learns from others. But bottom line, he's got to make the decision. So this question about the Enabling Act goes back to, how does separation of powers figure into that? People often ask me, they say, well, why is it that lawyers follow previous cases when there's a statute that says this, that, or the t'other? Well, the answer to that is easy, separation of powers. The courts follow their own decisions. They don't go looking to the President of the United States or the Congress, or if it's a state court, to the state legislature. Well, they can if they want. They can listen. Well, they got a point. Oh, we agree with the legislature. But if they don't, or the president or the governor, they can say, no, we don't agree, and here's what we think. Well, that's separation of powers. That explains why, you see. People get so upset. They say, well, the courts just do anything they want. And I say, yeah, that's right. That's what they do. They do what they want. And if we did not have that, friends, neighbors, and kin, as crazy as it gets, and it gets crazy, I know, but if we didn't have that, then all the power, all those three powers, would be gathered under a single will. And if you've got that, then you've got the very definition of tyranny. You want to know?
I understand that.
Yeah, what tyranny is.
I don't.
Go ahead, Terry. Go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
No, it's your turn. I've been talking enough.
I want to read one sentence out of the Rules Enabling Act.
Uh-huh.
And then ask two questions. Okay?
Go ahead.
Said rules, this is section one, said rules shall neither abridge, enlarge, nor modify the substantive rights of any litigant. And that led to the rules being made and the statutes coming up and all of this stuff started happening the way they conduct their courts now. But the first question is, what happens when the rules become more sacrosanct than the rights they were written to protect?
Well, Terry, read that. I didn't hear the last phrase of that.
What happens? The quote or the question?
The quote.
The quote.
Yeah, read it again, please.
It's the second to the last sentence. In uh-huh. the first section of the Act.
Uh-huh.
Said rules shall neither abridge, enlarge, nor modify the substantive rights of any litigant.
Oh, uh-huh. I get what you're saying, yeah, okay.
And then the first question is, what happens when the rules become more sacrosanct than the rights they were written to protect? Which is, I think, is what we're seeing right now. And
we're seeing it.
I'm sorry?
No, I agree. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, the second question is, were those rules written to protect our rights or just to provide a convenient excuse to abrogate those same rights?
Well, when I read those rules, well, all those rules existed, well, in substance, all along. Now, the courts had their own rules. Congress did not tell the courts how to operate. The courts operated. and they had been operating for centuries. They had developed, by observation, customs. We call it due process. Just make it easy. We call it due process, the process that is due and owing to all concerned. And the courts have been operating according to that for centuries. And that process was a process developed over centuries by observations of what is fair, what is right, what works, and what doesn't. That's the laws of nature. That is our common law. What is our common law? Don't miss this. Our common law is due process. Our common law is not end result. It's not the standards about you hadn't ought to kidnap people, you hadn't ought to murder people, all that. You hadn't ought to steal your neighbor's property. That is the end result. But how do you determine who has and who hasn't? How do you determine who's guilty and who isn't? Due process. And that's what common law is. Common law focuses on the process. That's what we call it also the law of the land. The law of the city focuses on the result. You go to a law of the city country, France, all the countries of South America, all the communist countries, all under the code of Justinian, even Japan under the code of Justinian, in its various forms, and the Roman Church under the code of Justinian, that's in its ecclesiastic form. All of that is end result is all that matters. We don't care how you get there. The ends justifies the means, which I like to repeat often as a salient illustration. The Jesuit order, that's their motto. The ends justifies the means. In a common law country, the means, in other words, the process, the way, the course, the path you follow, that's what justifies the result. And if you don't follow the right path, then the result is no good. That's our common law. It is the process. It is the path you walk. And again, I don't know how much repeating of these things I've done on here, but Jesus Christ did not say, I'm the end result standard. I'm the Ten Commandments. He never said that. He said, I am the odos, the way, the road, the path you get on, and you stay on it. And by the way, it's a narrow one. Stick to it. Walk it. Go through the process. Do not deviate from due process. What is due process? And this is what you were referring to, too. When you say due process, you're referring to, among other things, a person's referring to the right to trial by jury. That's a process. That's the way you have to go if you're going to prosecute somebody. Grand jury indictment. That's the way you got to go. You can't just say, and it has happened in America, where U.S. attorneys just start prosecuting people and don't even try to get a grand jury indictment. Those things happen. Well, wait a minute. You tortured this fella till he confessed. Well, that's not following the right process, see? And you're getting the result you want. Well, what do you want? Well, I want confession. We'll concentrate on just getting it. We don't care how we get it. Let's waterboard the poor boy. Let's take his family away from him. Let's withhold food and water for a couple days, see if he'll talk. Let's put him on the rack and stretch him out a little. Well, no, that's the ends justifies the means. We can do anything we want as long as we reach what the statute, what the what the government says is the result that they want, or the result the prosecutor wants or something. Well, those rights you're talking about, those rights that are to be protected, are rights of due process. The right to remain silent. That's not an end result standard. That's a path that the government has to follow when they're trying to prosecute somebody to determine whether or not he's guilty or innocent. You can't make him slit his own throat with his own tongue. That's the Fifth Amendment. And of course, we have right to a speedy trial. Well, that's the way we do things. How? We do it fast. And if we don't do it fast, we're going to drop the whole case. That ought to be the law. It isn't. We've never realized that one. That even Congress passed a statute to try to make that happen in the courts. Didn't work a bit. That was back in the 1980s. The courts have found ways around it. So when you say, Terry, and you said it well, you said that these rules are supposed to protect the rights of the people. And when the rules then become an end of themselves, and they don't pay any attention whether or not the rules are actually doing the job, You ought to check the rules. Case in point. Case in point, habeas corpus. Habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is a contraction, a Latin contraction, for the phrase, we have the body. We have the body. Well, that's even a contraction. It's we have the body of the prisoner. Habeas corpus is the writ of habeas corpus. A writ is a command from a greater to a lesser, in this case, from a court to a jailer. From a court to a jailer, whereby the court sends a written order to the jailer and says, bring the body. You got the body. Bring the body of the prisoner before the court and prove that you have lawful reason to jail the prisoner. That's called habeas corpus. That's the way we do it now. That's a pretty good way. Unfortunately, the government's found a lot of ways around that now. But when it was first put in place, who put it in place? The courts? No. The Parliament of England, by statute, put it in place. People say, well, statutes aren't common law. Well, sure they can be. Everybody has a duty to follow the right process. That includes all congressmen, all state legislators, all people, and all the members of Parliament, every judge, every juror, everybody has a duty to do what they can to ensure due process is followed. Well, Parliament in England saw there was a need. Then before that, what they were doing was they were trying to ensure that people were not unlawfully jailed, and they required every prisoner in England, in every jail, to be interviewed by a judge and determine whether or not he was unlawfully jailed. That's the way they did it. And every prisoner in England was to be interviewed once every 3 months, once every quarter. Well, that worked for a century or two, but then as the population grew, that became onerous. And the judges were spread too thin, and they couldn't really pay attention to their job doing that. Traveling around to jails all over the country, interviewing every prisoner, becoming familiar with their case. So finally, Parliament said, this isn't working. We got to do something different. And I don't know who came up with this habeas corpus thing, but it's pretty smart. You say, well, does it work? Well, it has worked in the past, I know. And we discovered by observation, or these parliamentarians decided it was a good idea, discovered that it would work. By observation, they did it. It worked. It was the best thing they'd found yet to try to ensure against false imprisonment. Because false imprisonment is not the way we do things in a Christian country. You say, why is false imprisonment so important to us? It's not important in the rest of the world, by the way. It's important in America. And it's a vestige of our Christian past. Well, how do you mean, Brent? Well, I mean this, that God said to Adam and Eve, our grandma and grandpa, said, be fruitful, multiply, and scatter over the faces of the land. False imprisonment runs contrary, you see, to the fundamental covenant, the fundamental agreement, the fundamental understanding between mankind and God himself. God made the land, and he told us to scatter over it. That's what he told us to do. And if governments have the power to jail people without end and without reason, lawful reason, that puts a damper on something very important to God. That's where that came from. It doesn't exist in other countries because they're not Christian. It's that simple. The Bible is not the foundation, the final rule of faith and practice, the most important law book among them. No, they'll listen to anything else. Anything but that. Well, here, for whatever reason, those that founded this country were involved in a church relocation program, and all those ideas stuck with us. And they're not bad ideas. Matter of fact, you can read about it in the Declaration of 76. They say there, are the folks that started our country.
I really don't mean to interrupt you because you've always got a flow of knowledge that is way beyond mine. But these are the things that I'm grappling with right
now. Yeah, go ahead.
And that is that, you know, the Declaration of Independence, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and property. Our pursuit of happiness.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Is there a way, do you think it's possible to trade an infinite number of inalienable rights with a set of rules?
Well, that's an important question to grapple with, of course, and you've hit the nail with your head, as Hendricks used to say.
My head hurts.
Yeah, it makes a fellow's head hurt when you do that, but it is necessary to be done. But you put your finger on the sore spot, and do the rules swallow the reason for their existence? In other words, if the rules are not ensuring fair play, the proper course of process, we call it due process. We call it the law of the land, Article 6 of our Constitution, lifted from Magna Carta. We call it that. And if they're thwarting these inalienable, by the way, these rights are duties. Rights are duties. Rights are not something we put a selfish construction on rights in America. That's a false understanding. Even our old ancient common law, the due process I'm talking about.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I won't belabor it then. But let me finish with one point.
Yes, sir.
Somebody else might be interested. You probably heard me say all this. The Volkreich, our forebears called our common law the Volkreich. Well, that's where we get our word right. Volk is folk with an F, folk, the people, the right of the people. Who are the people? The militia. Who are the militia? The able-bodied men that serve on the jury and provide defense of the law of the land in so doing and provide defense of the land. That, and it was their duty. It was that the Volkreich means the people's duty. And that's what those words mean when we use it, especially in constitutional law. But I hasten to add, I don't know that lawyers understand that. Some might. I don't know. I've never met one. You have to do a lot of looking into the ancient past to finally connect these kind of dots. But it is an important point. So your rights are your rights denote your duties as Americans. And what is your duty? To govern. It is your duty to govern. Govern what? Well, whatever God's given you. Because if you do that, you don't need this external political government to bother you. That's fact. Oh, but you do. No, you don't. If you'll but govern yourself, and I know you'll fail, and I'll fail at some point, but to the degree you can govern your own self and those responsibilities, those duties, those rights that God has given you, to that degree, there is no need for political government. Is there a need for political government, as we call it? Yes, there is, because we all fail at various points, and things get out of hand. And it's a final check that our Maker has given us. He established, he said, I establish all authority, including the authority we call the powers that be. But I've gone afield now, Terry, I agree with you, though. When that happens, should the rules change? Or should we, that's why I brought up habeas corpus. They had a set of rules in place. They worked pretty good for a few centuries. But they got so that it wouldn't work because there were too many prisoners and not enough judges. So they came up with this idea.
You cannot replace an infinite number of inalienable rights with a set of rules.
Oh, I see what you're driving at. Well,
that's what they've tried to do.
Yeah. Are there an infinite, this is something to wrestle with too, are there an infinite number of rights that cannot be separated from a person? Responsibilities that cannot be separated.
I think there are, yes.
Well, that's a point that every person should wrestle with. I'm not convinced there's an infinite number. You are, for some reason, and maybe that's something we can talk about sometime. But
I'd love
in
to.
Any, go ahead. Well, in any case, whatever. Here's another fascinating point, Terry. Fascinating to me, anyway. Our courts, our Supreme Court and our federal courts and our state courts have tried for, even before our country was formed, our common law courts have tried to define due process. They all knew what it was, but they couldn't put a definition to it. And even yet, in recent times, our courts have said due process is unknown. Well, remember, due process is common law. Due process is the law of the land. That's another name for it. due process, in other words, our common law, is unknown until there is adversity and the need arises to see what it is. One of the most important and, again, salient rights of our Constitution, responsibilities, is due process of law. No man's life, liberty, or property shall be taken without due process of law. Magna Carta says, essentially, without the law of the land, which is due process of law. And well, if it's, go ahead. What's that, Terry?
I just said I agree with that. But
yeah.
The whole thing is that I do not feel that we have common law, that according to the Rules Enabling Act, they blended equity and the common law. And so now we have 80 years of precedence that says if you want common law, we have it right here in these equity courts. And yet, you know, John's papers go nowhere and they get shot down by a judge who thinks they're doing the right thing by quoting this other statute or a rule of the court. That's totally abrogating our rights to common law by asserting a statute. The rules are more sacrosanct than the right.
Well, the rules, no, I get your point. The rules, the statutes, can be according to common law. As I'd pointed out, for example, I like to use the example of habeas corpus. But the statutes aren't always according to common law, and neither are the regulations, neither are the court rulings always according to common law. But the resilient feature of our common law is adversity. The law of the city, by contrast, does not thrive on adversity, does not tolerate adversity, does not tolerate disagreement. It is purely inquisitorial. You've heard of the Spanish Inquisition. That's not a pleasant thing. The Pope of Rome sanctioned a book called Hammer of Witches. Hammer of Witches. And that, you want to know what the ends justifies the means, and the theory behind that, read that book, Hammer of Witches. Over 100,000 on record, witches and warlocks were murdered on the European continent alone. Over 100,000 that we know about, probably a lot more. It was a mania like no mania. You talk about terrorism. And it spilled over into the American colonies, and there were 9 killed that way. And what they did, well, here's how it happened. And one of the judges, he was a Puritan judge, one of the judges who was involved, named Sewall, he wrote up his confession. They were having Bible study one night in his home. They did every night in his home. They got their Bibles out and went through a few passages, and he made a confession to his family. He wrote it down on paper, and he posted it on the door of the Old North Church in Boston. And what he said essentially was that they had been foolish enough to ignore due process, and that's how that happened. They ignored due process. Now, our common law is due process. Statutes will not stop our common law. Never have. Can't. Won't. The statutes can often be wrong. They can often be contrary to our common law. But our common law thrives only on adversity. If there is no adversity, no challenge to it, you can't even know what it is. And this has been one of the main arguments against it, against our common law, for a long time. And that grew into a mania in America in the 1830s and 40s, and there was a movement state by state to get rid of the common law, and one of the arguments the speakers traveling around the country were saying was, nobody can even know what the common law is until there's a need for it. But with a statute, or the law of the city, the Code of Justinian, we know exactly what the law is before we ever start. But the common law isn't, again, it's not end result standards. It's the way we go about, the manner, the way we go about living life. And in a common law country, we have a common law mindset. You don't even realize, I don't realize, I cannot fathom how much differently we in America think than folk in South America about their government, about the way they solve problems. Well, there's no comparison. And if you went into an inquisitorial court in Argentina and didn't throw up, there's something wrong with you. But as an American, I suspect it would make you sick. There is no adversarial process. There is no courtroom battle. There is no trial. There is only inquisition. That's the way of Babylon. Back to you, Terry.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You're not interrupting me.
Well, that's exactly what we saw, and listening to John appear in virtually in the court, all the judge wanted to do was quote statutes, and she had no idea what the common law was or how to conduct it. I feel that John and Gerard lost their due process because she threw out the case and didn't consider all the points he was making. To me, that is fraud and treason upon the court.
Well, they didn't even get to the points at all, did they?
No, they didn't.
Yeah, and what she said was, from what I heard, and I listened to the recording. I wasn't on the call. I just wanted to see what happened. The recording of the discussion, I guess what it was. Bottom line, the 12B6 motion, and they said you can't come into court as a non-member of the bar of this court and speak for other people. That was essentially the argument, I remember. I think that's what it was. Yeah.
That was one of the main ones, yes.
Yeah, that's the big one, and I think it was thrown out on that point. In other words, if these people want to come into court, and I said, well, the remedy of that is, in my mind, I was saying, the remedy is that every one of those people need to come in on their own authority and become part of the case and become a party of the case. And they can do that. They don't have to have somebody represent them, but in this case, as a practical matter, that's what happened. I didn't hear who talked, but apparently the court was saying that, John, you can't represent people. You're not a member of the bar of this court, and you're purporting to represent an organization. And that's like having a client. And you gotta be a member of the bar of this court to do that. That's what they said. And I would have predicted that would have happened because I've been in court a long time. I've never seen anybody go into court and speak for somebody else. If there's anything that's not tolerated in American courts, that's what's not tolerated. And the judge can give you permission to do that, but they never do it. And the reason they never do it is because it's not part of our tradition. It's never been part of our tradition. Here's another point. And I'm not saying things are right or wrong. I'm just saying this is the way they are. And it's important to know when you go into battle, you need to know the way things are, whether it's right or wrong. You better know the lay of the land. Well, see, lawyers in the common law country, and I know we're over time, so let me stop here and ask Gerard if we need to quit.
I would like to say one thing.
Oh, go ahead.
And that is that I agree. Quoting these statutes is not part of our tradition. We were practicing common law before the Rules Enabling Act. And now I just observed on the 25th, last Friday, of that common law being taken away from a person. We were able to represent other people as at least as next friend in common law before the Rules Enabling Act. And you say it's not part of the tradition. When did this tradition start? And I submit that it was at the Rules Enabling Act, and that now we have a whole bunch of people that's all they've ever known, and they don't want to even consider this idea that common law still exists, and that's where I can claim my rights.
Well, the Rules Enabling Act, before the Rules Enabling Act, you couldn't go into court and speak for somebody unless you're a member of the bar of that court. That didn't change anything. That didn't change that.
Okay.
You can go back. Back to the beginning of our country. Go ahead. What's that?
No, I was just going to say I'll concede that point, but still, I should be able to go in. It is John and Gerard that have brought the suit, and the fact that they wrote the papers should be enough to say, hey, we will be heard.
They'll be heard, but they'll only be heard for themselves. That's what the court, I think, was saying. And that's they can do that. They can go in for themselves and be heard. And everybody that was a member of that association can go in for themselves and And you could sign 1,000 people, 1,000 parties to the case on there, but to put down there the name of an organization, then the court's going to say, well, you can't represent an organization. You're not licensed. You're representing other people.
Are you saying that I have to have a license to hold a grand jury?
No. Let's just talk about the case. Courts are going to say you cannot speak on behalf of other people unless you're a member of the bar of that court. That's not new. It's been that way for centuries, going back at least to the 1300s.
I think Lysander Spooner would disagree with you.
Well, Lysander Spooner is a smart man, and I like his stuff, but he was a firebrand. Maybe he would disagree. But I know just from what I only know what I read and research, and I know that lawyers had to be a member of the bar of the court before which they've spoken, and that started after the Norman invasion because of the differences in language. But it got worse. William the First, 1066, he brought in Roman priests from France and put them in the positions of judges all over England. And the people in England, the Anglo-Saxons and the Danes, said, wait a minute, this ain't going to work because these guys are going to apply the Code of Justinian, the ecclesiastic law. And they did. And they organized themselves and went to combat in that. And they formed in England what's called today, and they're still there, the Inns of Court. And they said, we can't train our common lawyers in the university at Oxford or even later Cambridge. We'll form our own institutions and train them. And they did. And those became the Inns of Court. They became very powerful. Even when William Blackstone delivered his lectures in the year 1765 at Oxford, that became those four volumes I was talking about, that he was the first man in the history of Oxford to ever lecture on the common law at Oxford, because it was controlled utterly by the Jesuits. It was a plant of Rome. All the universities were plants of Rome all over Europe for that purpose, to promote the Code of Justinian. Well, they organized and they got things in order, and they began to say, you can't speak for another person in a common law court. And they slowly began to get men that were so good at what they were doing, the king would appoint them to positions of justice and judge, and they began to push the Roman lawyers out. That's what a Roman priest is. He's a lawyer of the law of the city. First, foremost, and primarily. That's what he's trained to do, and highly trained, by the way. Well, they begin to push him out. And after that, then the Inns of Court, of course, said you can't practice, you can't speak for another person, that's the way to say it, in the common law courts of England unless you have our stamp of approval. And it was rigorous. It took years. You couldn't be appointed to the bench unless you had practiced law up from age about 17, 16 or 17, started your training until you were 45 years old. You had to be one that practiced law in the courts, the common law. And that is how, by the way, our common law, how the people in England preserved our common laws through those Inns of Court. And I was talking about sergeants of law, the highest position attained at an inn. It became very fraternal. And the reason it became fraternal and even secretive, it became their own organization. It became fraternal in this way. Reputation among the men and camaraderie was everything because they were at war. Rome had established a school in the Netherlands at a place called Douai to train priests to pose as Protestants and infiltrate the courts of England to destroy the common law. That's the fact of the matter. And every conflict in England after that, after 1066, and the Civil War of England was over that question, jurisdiction of the courts and which law would apply. That's all it was about. And by the way, that's all the American Revolution was about, was getting our common law back in place. Well, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I am saying this is the history of the matter, and this is why that lawyers, to speak for another person, you got to be the member of the bar of that court. Now, you can speak for yourself. That's all right, and there's no problem with that. I would suspect that if that case went back in, that if every person filed for themselves or filed a joinder to whatever was filed, a complaint, or a motion, simple joinder, then they could all be in court. That's my prediction. I don't know what a judge would do, but that's my prediction.
Well, I do appreciate you entertaining my question, sir, as a student who's trying to learn. And I do appreciate your time and your answers, and I would love to continue this maybe another time.
Well, yeah, because we're probably, what time is it, 20 after or something?
Let me see. It's about time that
Did Gerard leave already?
I don't know. I haven't found him.
It could be just you and I, Terry, talking. I don't know.
John, did you want to end this, or what would you like to do? I think that we've batted things enough.
There are 42 people, or 40 or 50 people probably left here from all I can see. But
yeah.
Okay.
And I don't want to take over the meeting. I that wasn't my objective here. I think that you answered mine. You've given me a lot of food for thought, and I need to study more and reorient my questions and be able to express.
Well, John Gerard still here, but it's time to go. I'm getting some signals. So I'll let you end the meeting if you want to, since you're in charge.
Well,
I won't do it.
I think that this is a good note to end on, and we appreciate everybody being here, and we appreciate it. I can't get a hold of Gerard or John, and if they jump in, then we can end it, but I'm going to end it anyway, whether they do or not. So thanks, everybody, for coming tonight. I'm sorry we didn't get to all your questions. I hope that the discussion was beneficial to you, every one of you, and I hope you return again. Thank you very much.